think we can start another meeting. To the National Commissioner and your Commissioners, welcome to this meeting, to the Office of the Inspecting Judge, the Office of the Ministry, stakeholders, people from the media, the AG's office, you're all welcome. The interaction that we're having today, ladies and gentlemen, is by virtue of the authority granted us by the Constitution to, as Parliament, oversee the executive. Also, by virtue of our responsibility as members of Parliament to ensure that taxpayers' monies are well spent, and also by instruction of the budgetary process within Parliament that we have this annual interaction, and on Thursday adopt as a committee a report that will be presented to Parliament on the basis of evidence that we have solicited from the Auditor General, that we've solicited from stakeholders, that we've solicited from yourself, and make a determination and present that to the AG, and present that to the House, and through the House to the Executive. And that will happen on Thursday at 11 o'clock. Committee will sit and then finalize its deliberation. So that really is the process that will be followed, and the authority granted to this committee to do what we are doing. To start a commissioner, and the, by the way, what will happen is that we're going to ask him for to share with us observations of the research unit for 10 minutes. We will also then afford the department 15 to 20 minutes to do an overview, if you so wish. We don't really expect an in-depth presentation because we've had all these documents and have been working with them for the past 2 weeks, but we'll afford you 15 minutes to 20 minutes just to do an overview, and then we'll open up for members to do what they are supposed to do, that is to hold you to account. So that's really how we're going to handle it. And the better part of our engagement would be when we have our discussion. So that's how we're going to conduct our meeting today. Just to say, Commissioner, about a year ago, more than a year ago, this committee approved a budget of 16.7 billion rand on the basis of a strategic plan that you presented to Parliament. And today we want to then assess whether that 16.7 billion rand that you were granted through this committee has been well spent. As I was saying, Commissioner, the 16.7 billion rand was on the basis of about 122 targets that you had brought before Parliament. The Auditor General says to us that you only achieved 47% of those targets. And in your response, I'm hoping that you will talk to it, because we certainly are going to raise it. The Auditor General, in the annual report, also indicates to us that this department did business with prohibited institutions, blacklisted institutions. It says to us you did business with DCS officials, doing business within DCS. (Clears throat) The AD indicates that over and above the efforts that were a reason for your qualification, material misstatement on accrual, commitments, contingency liabilities, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, employee costs, prepayments, capital assets, goods and services, and leasing identified by the auditors in the submitted financial statements were subsequently corrected. But the uncorrected material misstatements resulted in the financial statements receiving a qualified audit. Saying to us, Mr. Sokela, that even the financial statements that you presented to the auditors were not, they were not in line with what was expected from them. The financial statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in all respects in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework. And therefore you had to make changes, and therefore we have a qualification. I also want to bring to your attention expenditure management. The Accounting Office of the National Commissioner does not always take effective steps to prevent irregular and fruitless expenditure. The Accounting Officer does not always ensure effective internal controls are in place for payment, approvals, and processes. Sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained that all money was spent with the approval of the Accounting Officer. Or the properly authorized official as required by Treasury regulations. Payments were sometimes made in advance of the receipt of goods or services in contravention of Treasury regulations. Contractual obligations and money owed by the department were not in all instances settled within 30 days as required by the Public Finance Management Act and Treasury regulations. And of course we received quite a bit from the stakeholders when we met with them. I'm saying all this, Commissioner, because we took a conscious decision at this committee when we first met in 2009 that in our term this department must have an unqualified or a clean audit. In our term it must. And we've got 18 months to the end of our term. And we're 18 years since 1994, and this is one of the departments that has never received an unqualified audit report, ever. So we have a mountain to climb, and I'm hoping that members of Parliament, when they engage with you, are able to, at the end of the day, give some guidance and direction to our ultimate goal of making sure that this department moves from the situation of the perennial qualification to one where we are unqualified. Because all of the things that I've read, and I deliberately read them, are not insurmountable. Internal control is not an insurmountable thing for the level unqualified audit. Staying within the prescriptions of the Treasury regulations is not something that's insurmountable. So all the qualifications that we've received, I think, are things that if we just applied ourselves could be done. There's no excuse for somebody doing business with the department if he's a member of the department. So those are the concerns that we want to put before you, Commissioner. And as we engage, we will raise the concerns that were raised last week by the inspecting judge that we promised that we would share with you so that you can, in your response, respond to them. And one of them, or just three of them very briefly, so that at least you can think about them. The organizational restructuring, for want of a better word, apparently has been approved by yourself, Commissioner. It's waiting for final approval from, I think, the executive authority. And the inspecting judge believes that once that is done, they will be able to improve on their service delivery. When interrogated at a in the report says of the 47 unnatural deaths, I think about 10 or in excess of 10 were classified or categorized as unknown cause of death. And our question to them is that because you are supposed to investigate and because there's supposed to be a post-mortem for every unnatural death, we don't understand why you could come here and say to us, reason unknown. If there's post-mortem, how can it be reason unknown? Their answer to us was that, well, at the time of the death, post-mortems were not carried out. And our question to you, Commissioner, is why is it taking so long for post-mortems to be done? I think there needs to be closure from the side of the family for the reasons. There needs to be finalization of who is guilty of perpetrating those deaths, whether it's official against inmate or inmate against official. So this post-mortem has lots of side or domino effects, and we think that something needs to be done to fast-track them. Since 2009, there probably has been in excess of 100 unnatural deaths. If you take all of them, to date nobody has been convicted of them. When we ask, one was convicted of them, I beg your pardon. When we ask the inspecting judge, but how are you doing your work, if in excess of 100 unnatural deaths, only one is convicted, the answer was that, well, the department makes a case to the police then do their investigation, take it to the prosecuting authority, and the prosecuting authority then takes a decision. Whether to prosecute or not. And our question is, in all these cases where they're not prosecuted, are we really asking the prosecuting authority why do they think it's not prosecutable? Is it because of inadequate investigations or why? Because I don't think that we can have 100 deaths and only one person culpable. And they raise that with us. And then finally, our understanding is that the properties, leases have not been finalized. I'm talking about head office and the satellite office. I don't know if they're working on a month-to-month basis, but they don't have secure places from which to work, and there's no IT to talk about. Really, that's what they're saying to us. So in your presentation, Commissioner, Department, if you can talk to those things as well, so that we preempt those things being raised by the department, by members, initially, so that they can raise them on the basis of your response. I thought I'd raise that context so that we understand broadly where we're going to talk. But members obviously have prepared and they will have other areas other than what I've raised that they will raise and you will then have to respond. Having said that, can we move on to Paul? We've got 10 minutes just to give us an overview and then we'll move over to the Commissioner to give us his overview and then we'll discuss these matters.
Thanks, Captain. Good morning, Honourable Members, Commissioner, Senior Members of the Department of Correctional Services, Inspector Judge and colleagues. Chairperson, I'm not going to go into line by line of this slide based on the time constraints. I'll just highlight some of the key issues that need attention. I'll just skip introduction, go straight to slide 3. We've noticed that among other issues of concern raised from this report, lack of consistency between performance and plan targets. I believe the Auditor General raised some of these issues. Measurability of targets is still a concern. Some targets are not clearly identifiable and specific enough. Key successes. We've noted that there were a number of successes experienced in 2011-12, I would not speak to. They are there. On members have got the presentation. I'll just shoot straight to key challenges. Among other challenges experienced include the challenge in terms of development of correctional sentence plan being prescribed in 1-day period. Retention of guest skills, which is our everyday song, an increase in regular expenditure from 1 million if we look at the 2010-11 annual report to 250 million in 2011-12. Also an increase in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. If we look at the previous annual report, 68,000, 2010-11 to 71 million, 2011-12. of course, there's been an underspending of 893 million. Program 1 administration, they only spend 89.9% of their budget. And we've noted that Shepperton, more funds were allocated to this program via men. Still, the department could not spend that particular budget. And some of the programs or activities, other programs had to suffer because there were no funds. We could also see the trend in terms of environment in different years, starting from 2009-10, 2010-11, 2011-12. Program 2, security, only spent 99.8% of the budget. If we look at the spending pattern, 2009-10, there's been a roller coaster spending pattern here, 98.5%, 97%, and it's increased to 99.8% in 2011-12. Shepperton and natural gas, looking at the third quarter report of the department, they reported 35 unnatural deaths end of December 31st. End of the financial year, which is the fourth quarter, total it was 46. So 35 it was year to date. So end of the fourth quarter, or end of the financial year, it was 46. Variance is 11. Which if you make deductions, it means every quarter around 11 unnatural deaths are recorded. If you further break it down, it means 3.5 unnatural deaths per month in correctional facilities for 2011-12. Program 3, corrections, managed to spend 97.6% of the budget. If you look at the spending pattern, 100% 2009-10, again 100% 2010-11, but only 97.6% 2011-12. Shepperton percentage of eligible offenders with work opportunities, year to date, December 31st, 35,881 work opportunities created. End of the financial year, 35,898 work opportunities. Difference is 17. If you make deductions, it means in the last quarter, only 17 work opportunities were created. 30 dedicated centers or units to house offenders with sentence of less than 24 months have been identified. Firstly, I had a concern with the target here because the target did not specify. Hence, we said some of the targets are not clearly identifiable or clearly measurable. The target was dedicated centers or units to house offenders with sentence of less than 24 months. It didn't specify how many or when and so on and so forth. But the actual was 30 dedicated centers or units were identified. I think this is a good initiative from the department, Shepperton, because we've been raising concerns around the offenders with sentence of less than 24 months, that they don't have sentence plans, which means they don't have access to a number of rehabilitation programs. I think this is a good initiative because it means there will be tailor-made, I assume, there will be tailor-made program for these people because they'll be isolated in a certain section, or units, or a particular sense. So there might be specific attention paid to those offenders. But, Honorable Self, on the other side, unintended consequences of this might also mean that presiding officers might be more inclined now to sentence offenders to imprisonment because there are dedicated facilities for those with short-term incarceration. This can be one of the unintended consequences of this initiative, although it's a good initiative, but we also need to look at that particular area. Care program needs to spend 100% of budget allocated. If we look at the spending pattern, 100% since 2009 and 10, 10, 11, 11, 12, 100%. But, Honorable Self, we could see that 100% of the entire budget has been spent. But we could also see that 129 million was taken out of this particular program to fund other programs, I think particularly administration. I'm not sure whether you can say you managed to spend 100% or you achieved your 100%, whereas at the end of the day you took money out of this program and injected it to administration program. Percentage of inmates on medical treatment for communicable disease, year to date, first quarter, 8,777, end of the financial year, 8,796, which means the difference is 19. So it means by the fourth quarter, 19 offenders were accommodated in this category. Development program, they've managed to spend 100% of their entire budget. If you look at the spending trend, at least it's been increasing 95.7% to 910, 97.9% 2010-11, 100% 2011-12. Again, yeah, we've seen that the 8 million was taken out of this particular program and it was injected into administration program. Percentage of youth in formal education, year to date, 31st December 2011, 3,345 youth participated in this. End of the financial year, 3,351. Only six offenders in the fourth quarter. Chairperson, in terms of development, we've noticed that the number of targets were not met. Targets for skills development were not achieved. Among other reasons, include shortages of professionals, which is our everyday song. Target for production workshops not achieved. Among other reasons, includes low rate of appointment of artisans due to their scarcity. 181 vacant artisan posts available. And I'm not sure, Chairperson, because you always raise the issue that if you go to our township or our suburb, we'll find a number of people unemployed, artisans unemployed, but the annual report says they are scared, these people. So there's that disjuncture between the annual report and what we observe in our everyday life. Most targets for agriculture were not achieved, Honorable Abram. And among other reasons, it includes old and dilapidated infrastructure, machinery and equipment, and ship system is another reason because of short working hours. Target for chicken production not achieved. Reason include broken abattoir at Zondervater Correctional Center. I just want to pause here, Chairperson. Remember I indicated earlier on that an amount of 38 million was taken out of this program to fund activities in administration. And you remember administration still could not exhaust all the particular amount. Now you've got an abattoir which is broken in Zondervater. Why can't it be fixed? But you take money out of this particular program, you send it to administration. Administration does not exhaust that particular fund. You've got old and dilapidated infrastructure and machinery and equipment. Why can't you fix those equipment? But you take money out of this program, you send it to administration. And you say you achieved 100% in terms of spending in this particular program. Especially in reintegration, they've managed to spend 100%. If you look at the spending trend for 9-10, 100%, 2010-11, as well as 2011-12. But of course, we also notice that 17 million has been taken out of this program. Percentage of eligible cases considered by parole boards, year to date, 31 December 2011, 33,879. At the end of the financial year, 60,884. Honorable Winnie, it means the variance is 27,000. So to me, it means this parole board were very energetic in the last quarter. Because in the last quarter, they managed to do almost half of what they've done in the past three quarters. So we really understand what were the reasons why they were so energetic in the last quarter. And we've also noticed that the victims who attend parole court hearings, they've also, their numbers increased in the last court as well. So I don't know whether we should clap hands for this parole court, or we need to question why they could not work effectively in the past 3 quarters, but only work in the last quarter. Facilities, they could not spend their entire budget, 82.1%. This one is the culprit, 2%, because it's the biggest contributor in terms of underspending. We could see, 2%, that 2009 and 10, they spent 97.2. 2010-11, it went down, 85.5. 2011-12, it went further down, 82.1. I'm not sure what will happen in 2012-13, because we could see that the spending trend is going down in the particular program. And also notice the environment trend to 2010-11, money was taken out of this program, as well as the last financial year, almost 40 million was taken out of this particular program. We've also given a table in terms of capital work projects contributing to underspending. I would not waste time to speak to those. Slide 15, the final appropriation, 16.7 billion, but they managed to spend 15.8, 94.6%. An amount of 894 million was not spent. And we could see also, Chairperson, the spending pattern over 3 financial years. 2019, it was 98.9%. 2019, it went down in 5.3%. Again, 2011-12, further went down. This one is like the facilities. So the spending pattern in terms of the department, the entire budget pattern is further going down. I'm not sure what will happen in 12-13 financial year, because since 2009 and 10, they've been underspending. Slide 16, fruitless wasteful and irregular expenditure. We've noticed that 71.3 million in fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in 2011-12. And among other things, it's as a result of this 8 million unavailability of MOU contract or SLA between DCS and DPW. Of course, Chairperson would expect that the department will further unpack on this point. What do they mean that there was fruitless expenditure as a result of unavailability of MOU contract and the state level agreement between themselves and DPW? And I'm not sure, Chairperson, if the MOU or the service level agreement has been signed between the two departments. Hopefully the department will be able to share some light around that. Also, Chairperson, another contributor was 4.859 million suspensions not reviewed. Mamwini, we always talk about suspensions. Chairperson always asks how much has been spent in terms of suspensions, figures in terms of suspensions longer than 2 years, 3 months, and so on and so forth. We could see, Chairperson, that there was 2,008 expenditure in terms of suspensions not reviewed. Another amount is for cancellations of PPP. I'm hoping this is the last slide, Chairperson. Slide 17, we've given the trends or patterns in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Looking at the past annual reports, 87,000, 2009-10, 68,000, 2010-11, 71.3 million, 2011-12. Irregular expenditure, 214. 652 million in regular expenditure for 2011-12. Of course, all cases are under investigation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mpho. Let's hand over to you, Commissioner, for the department's input, and we'll open it up for engagement.
Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, we sincerely thank you for this engagement. And certainly let me recognize the presentation made by the analyst and the researcher of the analysis that has been made with respect to the annual report of the department. sincerely appreciated, and therefore taken note of the contents thereof. And we indeed will be able to engage on some of the issues, in fact on all the issues that are raised therein. Chairperson, we are here to present the annual report of the year under review, with a clear view of providing this committee with our analysis and our action plan towards a clean audit, which this committee alluded as that of an activist portfolio committee that seeks to have a clean audit at the end of your tenure of office. We've taken cognizance of the fact that we are dealing with a complex department with complex challenges, but equally, which requires a complete set of competencies. We shall, in the process of this engagement and this appearance today, look into two areas of focus, which are highlighted in the annual report under review. One is the performance information, two is financial performance and management. Iwadu shall provide a synoptic overview of the following key drivers towards an intended objective which we share with yourself, among which we want to share and clarify with yourself is an issue of leadership and organizational culture. Two, reporting, monitoring and evaluation of projects. Three, the operating environment. In assessing the state of our annual report, we're taking a robust sense in order to deal and elevate these matters to a high level, given a sense of urgency towards the issues that portray the organization and entity picture and public perceptions which are not good for us, especially in the light of the public opinion and the audit opinion of the Auditor General of South Africa. The engagements they will take into account current state of the department, and where we hope we'll be able to provide with you a financial roadmap and programs that will be put in place. Our engagement with other stakeholders in the GCPS cluster also has a bearing to this matter, including other suppliers and institutions to whom we shall speak to in respect to the department as a whole. Allow me, Chairperson, to provide a high-level assessment of the department with respect to predetermined objectives which are covered in the annual report. We do agree and assure you that we have identified 122 performance indicators, and yet our report as presented only gives you a 47% achievement. We are not proud of this achievement. We are not happy about the delivery that has been provided to yourselves and the public in general. However, there is a compelling reason for us to be able to look into this matter as to why we failed to achieve 100%. It needs to be borne in mind that there were issues that we needed ourselves to do an introspection to, provide an ability to do a measured approach to issues that we have identified and have implemented that is unambiguous, that is able to relate to issues. One, that the targets that we set ourselves are strategic or are they operational? And I must say that in most cases, the onus falls on us, because it needs to be questioned as to why did we identify 122 targets. In this day and age where organizations need to measure their performance, there is a need for us to scale down and be able to be specific in terms of the targets that are measurable, that are aligned to the vision of the organization in its entirety. And we have taken a principled position when we did an introspection of the annual report, that it is about time that we don't populate our performance indicators for mere expediency of having numbers that we will not be able to achieve given the complexity of the organization. And indeed, we take cognizance of the fact that the 122 that we have set ourselves, some of which ought not have been elevated in the document itself. Chairperson, with respect to financial management and performance, we compare and agree with the presentation that has been provided to us that there is massive underspend in terms of budget, a budget of 16.7 billion, and yet the level for which we have responded to does not meet the requirement. We're taking cognizance of the fact that there are deficiencies in terms of management of assets. We've also taken cognizance of the fact that there is material overstatement, and we've taken cognizance of the fact that the procurement processes within the department are not efficient and effective. Among others, alluded to by the analyst, that we have officials who are having relationship with the department in terms of procurement. We need to put in place mechanisms that deal with contract management, management of suppliers, DCS members doing business with the department and as part of other issues that have been identified. Chair Hassan, we have taken note of the Karina Native Audit Opinion of Auditor General of South Africa, and at this point, at no point have we underplayed the seriousness of the negative audit that has been given to us. However, cognizant of the fact that we must make headways in order for us to deal with the issues that are on the board. May I then, with your permission, Chairperson, make a pure admission of the fact that when we took office in 2010, in dealing with the Auditor General of South Africa, who is present here, the AGSA dashboard provided a clear and different scenario. We are not powered by the outcomes, but we need to highlight the fact that there are measures that have been put in place because we are managed on three categories: on leadership, financial and performance management, and finally on governance. On the previous one, on leadership, we are proud to indicate that measures are in place that, despite the negative perceptions that are there, there is movement in terms of the previous assessment of this organization. There is effective leadership. With respect to financial, before I get to that, the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General of South Africa with respect to IT, which we shall deal with effectively and efficiently in this meeting, which is a scourge for this organization and a panacea for problems that we face in terms of service delivery. With respect to performance management, we take cognizance of the fact that the challenges that we face, and of course the understanding that has been alluded, is cause for concern. With respect to governance, Chairperson, we are in a position to report to ourselves that with issues of governance, this department is in a position to respond to issues of governance and respect to others that we need to do. I think it is important and very important for us to deal with issues of human resources, because these are the cornerstones, which is, these are the issues at the core of the organization. We have noted the serious concerns around the abuse of sick leave. We have also taken note of the abuse of overtime. We have also taken note of the vacancy rate within the department. And we have also taken note of the retention and recruitment strategy, the lack thereof. And there is a need for us also to spend time on the issue of professionalization of the department in terms of support structure and functions in particular. Allowing, therefore, on the issue of human resource, which shall be dealt with adequately in this discussion, where we speak about leadership and problems that are facing us in terms of human resource, especially on the abuse of sick leave, we want to indicate to ourselves that we are facing an organization that has gone through a process of resistance to change. A number of changes that, in fact, avoid also affect the working environment. One, sick leave may be a factor of abuse of alcohol, and the environment under which they work, resistance to change, and inability for management to see where these problems are. With respect to overtime, it may be a result of the fact that in the cold phase we have not addressed the issues that we need to deal with. In respect to HR in particular, we may not be proud by the fact that we only have 3.6% of vacant posts. So 3.6, if it is converted into figures, it might give us a bigger picture in the cold phase of business. We have taken cognizance of leadership, but it is not expedient for us to be only filling positions at the higher level of the organization, while at the same time forsaking and not dealing with the issues at the core of business. And for this reason, therefore, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, we're taking a principal position that the core base of business need to be adequately scaffolded. With respect to retention and recruitment of core competencies within the organization, there are areas which we feel will need your support in order for us to achieve this objective. In the areas of education and health, it was our humble belief that these are transversal responsibility of the state. I'm saying this given the hindsight of the educational tour that we had with the minister, that in all the three countries that we have visited, education and health is a prerequisite and a competence of the state. And therefore, it becomes more difficult for us to recruit professionals in this particular field because of the environment under which we operate. And it is important, therefore, that we deal with the remuneration challenges that we face in this respect. But turning to the professionalization of the organization, given its historical background, it is not too late for us to recognize the fact that HR, finance, and IT are perfect science and they need specialized people. And if we look into our own organization as an analysis, some of the people occupy some of those positions are not qualified to be dealing with those competencies. And yet we are in a position to point to ourselves that with respect to IT, we have turned that corner. The CFO, the CDC, HR, I will be dealing with these issues, especially in terms of professionalization of the sector under review. With respect to IT governance, we shall engage appropriately and robustly with yourselves to demonstrate that change has come to this organization. There has been, of course, serious problems, historical challenges that have impeded us to be able to deliver on the mandate that we've been charged with. An organization such as DCS has been seriously disadvantaged by the fact that we have had for the past 8 or 10 years, 18 years, have had consultants at the helm of the organization. We're not sitting and looking backwards, but we're sitting here looking into the future. We can report that considerable changes have taken place with respect to changes in this sector. And the levels of reduction of consultants in this field has significantly dropped. But it would be amiss of us not to mention the fact that if you have a weak IT, given the expense and the horizontal spatial development of this organization, that the lack of IT will have a serious impact into the deliverables. We've had RDOMs in the department for the last 6-7 years and it is not function. We have EMRS, which is also a platform upon which we are supposed to deliver our reports. It's not there. And yet, it is something that needs to be unhacked and dealt with. Chairperson, the analyst spoke about facilities and infrastructure. We're dealing with facilities that are old and dilapidated. The state has not invested in this respect. But equally, on the corroborative side of the events, organizations and countries that invest in prisons are seen as centers wherein crime is going to be the panacea for the future. But I want to put to yourself that we are proud to sit here as management to have taken a decision with the previous minister to cancel the triple P's. And we make no public apology on this matter because the triple P's that we have currently we have no control of. The state cannot abdicate its responsibility with respect to the development of offenders in our facilities. We want to put to yourself that the minister in her wisdom that feasibility studies we put in place in order to deal with the additional bed space that we need in order to deal with the issues of overcrowding. We want to take you and thank the researcher for looking into other issues that we as management have been able to deal with, the successes that we have dealt with. But these are blighted by the fact that the report of the inspecting judge gives a different picture as to how we treat offenders. The culture of human rights is something that must be a beacon to all of us. We are concerned as the department as leadership of the number of unnatural deaths that have taken in the organization. We are also concerned about the number of assaults that have increased over the past previous years. The answers, it is for us as a collective to look as to what are the underlying concerns that have led us to this particular phenomenon. Indeed, we find it very much uncertain that when heads of the centers, when there is a natural death, they are taking a tidy approach in terms of post-mortem that are necessary. But I would like to put to the committee, as in general, that we have issued an instruction for any unnatural death, there must be a post-mortem within an agreeable time. Because it is not even for us to deny the families and the public such to be able to be transparent and efficient in terms of being able to report appropriately about the people who are under our care and unable to account for the deaths that have occurred. But equally, the issues of assault, a sore eye in our faces, is an issue that we want to elevate to the highest level of this organization, that assault should not in the first place take place in our facilities. Because offenders, by virtue of being sentenced, have appropriately been assaulted by the law in terms of the long sentences that have been given to them. We want, of course, Chairperson, to recognize that as an organization, the successes that we have achieved. It will be amiss of me as an accounting officer. I have taken responsibility of the fact that the changes that have taken place, not to speak about successes that we have done. From a policy perspective, yes, we have achieved a number of milestones. The establishment of the demand detention branch, the differentiation between sentenced and unsentenced offenders, the filling of senior top management post, the elevation of senior position with respect to IT and internal audit, which is very important, and of course the appointment of internal control compliance senior officials. And of course, want to put to this committee that we have, as of the year under review, establishment of the Medical Parole Board, which, in our belief, is comprised of men and women of stature who have been able to deal and be able to help us to deal with issues of medical problems in our facilities. We also want to indicate that the implementation of the electronic monitoring is something that we need to pride ourselves as a country, but it needs to be expanded broadly in order for us to be able to deal with issues of community corruption, which is a specific branch that we have elevated as a differentiation. And we're proud to report to yourself that we have reduced the number of escapes in the department. Be as it may, Chairperson, on issues of finance and issues of administration, we put it to yourself that this department and the leadership that is presented and led by myself at the helm here are ready and prepared to engage with yourselves on issues on statistics and be able to provide you with reports in order for us to have a chartered clear picture into the future. I need to say here that I'm proud for the team that I have elected, the team that accompanies me, because it is a leadership that we believe that much as we have a blight in our history of 18 years of not achieving a thing on it, none of us are sitting here proud of that. But there may be mitigating reasons, but we do believe we shall be in a position, of course, in the short term, provide opportunities for us to engage and be able to also float in the sun to have a clean audit. I thank you, Chairperson.
There you have it, members. You've had the documents and you've had engagements with all relevant stakeholders. Let's open up a discussion. Right? Everybody says it, and let me start. While people gather their thoughts, I don't think they expected it to be so short. Let me take you to page 196 of the annual report. Let's start there. And that talks about the types of misconduct that the department officials have been accused of, found guilty of, and so on. Theft, bribery, 152 officials. Commit sexual harassment, 8. Discriminate against colleagues on the basis of disability, race, 3. Sleeping on duty, 41. Under the influence of alcohol or whatever, and habit-forming drugs, 119. Being in possession of alcohol, 3. Being in possession of illegal unauthorized habit forming, 32. Permitting an offender to take alcohol, 6. Misuse of firearm, 32. Falsification of records, 25. Now, there are many, many more. I've just picked up those because for me, those are all dismissible offenders. All of them are dismissible. And when I add that up, it comes to 142. I mean 421. You turn the page to the page 195, you've only dismissed 183 people. I'm looking at you, Ms. Mkwena, because you're HR. All those offenses that I've listed there are dismissible offenses. This department dismisses 183, I've listed 421. And I can go back to last year's report. I can tell you that last year you had all these same things. I've got the report before me. If you want me to read them up, mostly the same. Figures have changed slightly. But all these items as they are. And last year, you only dismissed 88 people. You only dismissed 88 people. And just on whichever one you think is the most difficult one, influence of alcohol, 110, for instance. I'm looking at last year. Alcohol, 110. You dismissed only 88. You tell me, misuse of firearm, 4. Breach of security, 410. The point that I'm making, Commission, is that this department officials are committing gross, I want to repeat, they're committing gross offenses. We dismissed 183 this year, we dismissed 88 last year. And if we continue in this pattern, Mr. Mkwena, the sense of impunity in this department is never going to be stopped. I can do as I please, no post-mortem. Therefore, nobody gets caught since 2009 for torture or murder. I commit 431 offences, only 183 people get dismissed. So, Commissioner, I take your point that you are committed, and all the leadership that is here were here last year, all of them, maybe with the exception of Ditto and internal. Everybody else was here last year. So none of you are excused from 88 last year to 183, and I've only raised 44. In fact, there were 4,000 misdemeanors last year, according to the annual report. You've only dismissed 183 people. You've given people written warnings, you've given people verbal warnings, for offenses that if it was in the private sector, they would be locked up for. They would be arrested for these things in the private sector. You give them written warnings. Can somebody explain to us what's happening in this department? What is happening in this department, National Commissioner, when such blatant things are happening in under your watch? I'm hoping after you've explained that, members will be able to then have picked up and answer questions. But whilst you answering those questions, can I have an indication of who wants to ask questions? Everybody. So let's start now, Mamwini, and we'll go that way. But can somebody explain? I'm sure members will by now have their questions. 421 gross for me. Unless you think they are not gross, I'll read them again. If you have not picked them up, I'm saying they are gross. I am saying they're dismissible. In fact, they are criminal, some of them. Not even half of them have been arrested. Please explain to me, Commissioner. And not only explain why is this happening, I need to explain what are you going to do going forward, because we need to make a recommendation. I'm really serious when I say, depending on your responses to us, we will in our BRR report make recommendations of whether we think you're serious or not about the matters that will be raised by members. Commissioner, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. The substantive report and the response to this will be given by the CDC HR on the indictment that you have read to us, which is public document and it is in the report. But I want to share in engagement with yourself in soliciting assistance, of course, is that we do an introspection about organizational culture. I'm not using this as a flimsy approach to make up for the possible responses, because we are here to be able to be assisted in order to deal with the scares that is happening within the organization. The organizational culture of this department, given its history, and personally having been a victim as an accounting officer, I think it is important for us to put this into perspective. The organization that you have no command and control, you have a serious problem. It's a serious problem, and indeed we are putting measures in place, because if you look into the whole organizational culture of this department, it is that because they come from a history of violence, they come from a history where things were done in the manner in which and the expanse of the territoriality of things that we do, we have a problem. We need to admit here that the 183 that we're talking about is not enough. Indeed, you recall, Chairperson, when I joined this organization in 2010, you all recall that we had an escape of 41 inmates in one facility. It could have been more. I want to thank the Regional Commissioner of Gauteng, Mr. Modise, who was Regional Commissioner of Freedom Northern Cape, when he alerted me on this matter when it was happening. We took a decision with the minister then to revisit this facility, and we took a decision to dismiss. And I think I became, and the minister and the department, something of an unpopular approach. Unless the roles of this country also change, to give the accounting officer the responsibility and ability to fire on site, because you are not doing it for the sake of malicious decisions. We fired the 41, we fired a number of officials in this facility, because it was gross negligence, breach of security, and endangerment of the society. Because among those that escaped were murderers, rapists, cash in high transit offenders, and yet, within no time, we were caught with an Oinika that we could not have done that. Yes, Chairperson, if you it was my organization, it was my company, I would not have hesitated, and as I had done, to take that decision. But when I make this request that as we make laws, that we take into account that the certain organization, we should be immune for certain processes of the law, because if we do so, we delay the justice that has to be amended and be expanded. Because we'll be seen by the same officials, juniors, to be laughing our faces that whatever we say cannot bite. And it is my concern, therefore, that I'm not in any way trying to make up for the shortfalls and the shortcomings that we have. We're still officials who have been arrested with marijuana, dharma, whatever it is, in our facilities. But we have to follow certain processes because it is in the ambit of the law. And they too have a strategy to delay the process in which these issues can be dealt with. But I think the CDC, Human Resources, has a strategy that to share with you in order for us to be able to once and for all to deal with this matter. Thanks, Chair. With your permission, I'll ask the CDC to respond to your question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, National Commissioner, members of the Portfolio Committee. As it relates to my response, I think it's important to share with the House, in essence, what happens the whole phase. It is not a general sweeping statement, but it has been known to happen. One of the challenges that we're facing as a department, and indeed as government departments throughout, and even as employers, even in the private sector, is an unwritten rule that as the employer, you cannot challenge your own process. You cannot challenge your own outcomes. By that, people who hold that view are saying that when you appoint a presiding officer, it is your choice, it is your prerogative as an employer to appoint a presiding officer. And therefore, whatever the outcomes of the decision and the function that that presiding officer arrives at, you as an employer need to embrace that. And sitting where I'm sitting, I question that. I think it's a fallacy. Because if you are saying you cannot review your own outcomes, by implication you are saying that whatever decision that the presiding officer arrives at, it's a foregone conclusion, it's a decision that you as an employer have been consulted upon. And therefore you have prejudged this thing. That is what, if you take that argument to its logical conclusion, flawed as it is, that's what it boils down to. That if a person is found sleeping on the job, which is a dismissal offense, in an area such as this, a security environment, if a presiding officer, for whatever reason, because we don't want to cast aspersions, decides that a written warning is justifiable, as an employee you are said to have been part of that decision by virtue of a letter that you issued in appointing that individual. And therefore I'm saying one of the things that we need to do going forward is to basically say, as an employer, I am not party to a decision. I, just as the defendant, I also go in there to argue my case. And if I'm not happy with the outcomes, be it the decision or the sanction, I should be allowed. And that is what happens, chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. There have been cases where deliberately, chairpersons know that once they have issued a sanction, the department is locked into that sanction, and therefore you cannot do anything. If you then go and seek to review that decision, a defense of double jeopardy is then thrown in your face. You are then caught in a legal quagmire that inevitably ends up with you having to say, it's fine, let the person come back. And I'm saying we do need to review these decisions. They are not our own decisions. They are decisions of the presiding officer. And if there is a just call for us to review that matter, surely we should be allowed to do that. It happens at the CCMA, it happens at the Labor Court. We have also reviewed matters where, in our view, we feel that the commissioners at the Public Service Commission have not applied themselves. So why then are you saying internally it cannot happen when it happens throughout? That is the first point, the person in going forward. Two, what needs to happen going forward is that there has to be a level of centralization at regional level when it comes to such matters. I am not saying take away the right of a manager to discipline someone for coming late. I'm not saying that. at some management area. But I'm saying at regional level, regional commissioners ought to be allowed to their regional heads, HR, and ER, to basically have a look at the cases that are sitting before them and have the right to allocate cases to people that they know are properly skilled to handle such cases. You have instances where, because these things are done at local level, that you do inadvertently end up doing matters or are finding people that are not properly capacitated in any event to handle them, or persons of suspect tendencies, and hence the outcomes that you inevitably end up with. So I'm saying there are two things. One, we need to be allowed the department to review cases, because certainly the picture that's appearing here is not in line even with the DCS code of conduct, which clearly indicates that these offences the department views in a serious light. But as I said, once a hearing sits in some corner and a decision is then meted out, you are then said to be locked into that. And the second point to my submission, Chairperson and members of the committee, that if we take away, if we centralize it at regional level, we then have hold. We are saying, because if you do the centralization, the good thing about centralization is that it also ensures consistency. You are then aware that in the past, we have dismissed people for this particular matter. You build your own case law within the department. Now, if you don't have a centralization approach, you even ignore your own case law. So we should be saying in region LMN, for instance, in the past years, we have dismissed people for smoking dacha. So whoever is assigned the case has the right to go back to the previous case law that we ourselves are creating to then argue the same material points to argue for a dismissal. Now, if you don't have that overview, you have people that because what happens is that people that are representing defendants, they are aware of these cases. They are aware that in some matter, you have ruled in this fashion. And they use that very same decision to say it has set a precedent. Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Let's open up the members. You know, as I said when I started, that hopefully we'll emerge from here with ideas to go and solve the problem. You know, one of the things that I think you need to do, Commissioner, if I think that you need to come back to this committee and tell the committee which offences are dismissible, and let's agree upon it. You know, in law we have the current law. There's this minimum sentence law that we have, so that magistrates and judges can't go beyond that in the law. Why can't we say these cases are dismissible, regardless of whoever says? This is a security institution. This is a security institution. Surely we could come and say these laws are dismissible, therefore it doesn't require any, this is what happened in the past, this is what happened. We need you guys to solve this problem for us. And one of the ways of solving it is identifying sleeping in a correctional facility is dismissible. And let's agree upon it. Abusing firearms is dismissible. And let's agree upon it. So it takes away the arbitrary chairperson's argument that you're using. Everybody knows if you are guilty, you are dismissed. I think we need to do that type of thing. And these that I've written to you, I'm arguing are all dismissible. And if you guys can't implement it, come and tell us. We'll find a way of assuring that the department implements these as minimum standard. We can't have sleeping on the job. We can't have bringing drugs and it's left to some official in the KZN region or some official somewhere to take a decision on it. We can't have it. We just cannot. So I'm saying that's one of the things that you guys must do. And Jenny, the next one, maybe come and give us a recommendation of which offences are dismissible on having been found guilty. No questions asked. I think you next come and see us on the 1st of November. We'd want a report that you suggest are dismissible offences. Mam Gwanya, can we give you, Mam, to take your questions and follow-ups thereafter, and then we'll move on to Makakon.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, Chairperson, I would like to thank the presentation from Mr. Matavake, our researcher. Chairperson, I will start with a correctional supervision and parole board, because it's the one that is in my heart that I want to see this department changing this department on this program of parole. heard the report of Department of Correctional Services is reporting that the transport for the victims is a challenge. Now, Chair, I want to know about the department that what are they doing to address that challenge, and what are the future plans to address this challenge? Secondly, a part of transportation challenges, what other challenges affecting victims of crime to attend parole hearing? And the system of electric monitoring was launched on February 2012. Chair, I want to know how many parolees and probation have been targeted with this monitoring system currently, and what are the time frame to roll out this system nationally? The second one, Chair, because Mama Baliso is not here, I know that she's also like this Department of Facilities. Chair, the department is reporting the state of the status of the agreement with the Department of Public Works. And now, Chair, I want to know that what are the reasons why the DG of the DPW did not sign the first service level agreement? You remember that there was a delaying of Kimberley to finish and all that. And Chair, when will the redrafted SLA be signed by both DGs? I would also like the department to explain about the progress has been made with the memorandum of agreement with the IDG that signed on the 30 September 2011 to manage infrastructure and technology projects, and what are the benefits of this approach. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, with respect to the question raised by Mamungwene on the issues of the parole, supervision and parole board, and the question that she has indicated, the issue of transport, and also on the issue of electronic monitoring rollout, facilities or service level agreement that have not yet been signed between the two parties, and the memorandum of agreement between ourselves and IDT. I have a team here that accompanies me and will respond to some of the issues. With respect to the parole board, colleagues will respond. I'll respond on the electronic monitoring. Yes, indeed, the electronic monitoring mechanism is in place. When it was launched last year and we've seen successes, approximately 108 parolees lifers have been tagged, and we have not yet even had a single escape or disappearance from the process. The project is a pilot, and we hope in the next 3 months, we'll be able to have an assessment as to the successes that we've been able to garner from the process that we have already put in place, thereby get a recommendation as to the national rollout. But yes, it is important also that a cost-benefit analysis, a cost assessment as to what are the implications, whether it will only affect lifers or certain categories of inmates, is something that we need to be able to deal with. My colleagues will speak about facilities, but let me hasten to indicate that we as Correctional Department, Correctional Services, we signed a service level agreement with the Department of Public Works, which we sent over, and we did not get a reciprocating approach from our colleagues. But I need also to put on record that I have on record several times approached the Department of Public Works, discussed this matter, and I will yet to get a response that is able to give us a proper mechanism. I have a report that indicates the number of meetings that I have had with Public Works. And as late as September last this year, I have tried to have a meeting with the DG of Public Works. And I do understand, I don't want to cast suspicion, that because of the serious problems that they face as a department, it has not been possible. It has been on the agenda, and it was cancelled last minute. As when are we going to sign the redrafted version of the service level agreement. It's something that I would like as an accounting officer to account to yourself that this matter is behind us. I'll do my duty, chairman and members of the portfolio committee, to relentlessly follow this matter and be able, and I'll try and make my office also to make inputs into this. Certainly, to our benefit, and also in relation to the audit that we shall have, because we are audited in our ability to have all our assets being in this. My colleagues will speak about the memorandum of understanding agreement with IT and the rationale thereof as to why we're using this agency, taking cognizance of the fact that IDT is the agency of state, that is part and parcel of the Department of Public Works. And therefore, on that basis, I request any of my officials present here to speak broadly on this matter. But I need also to indicate that the relationship that we have with IDT is based on pure principles of delivery and ability to be able to expand capital projects which Department of Public Works are unable at this point in time. I thank you, Chair. I'll delegate the responsibility to my colleagues who wish to respond to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to the question on what are we going to be doing to make sure that victims do participate. There is funding that has been received by the department from the CARA Fund, which the department is busy with the process of specifications to go out on a tender so that we can be able to make sure that we still participate through video. So we have a project that is looking at ensuring that citizens do participate, which is going to be through video. National Commissioner has already responded on the question of electronic monitoring, where we have targeted 150 parodies letters to be tagged during the pilot phase. And we are currently having about 112 lifers and other parolees who are posing a risk to the community who have been hurt. So the target for the pilot phase is 150, and the intention is to extend the electronic monitoring to parolees and probationers once the pilot has been concluded and we have the results of the pilot. Thank you.
Let me come back just having a chit chat with my colleagues here on the IDT matter. The IDT, the memorandum of agreement that was signed with IDT is a result of a glaring inability of the Department of Public Works to assist us in fast-tracking projects. It was based on the premise that it is important for us to be able to spend money appropriately by an agency that has been identified as being capable of dealing with matters of this nature. And indeed, when that agreement was signed, it was mainly in fencing, security, perimeter fencing, and other components. That agreement is equal to any other agreement that IDT has signed with any state agency at this department. I need to indicate that progress has been made in respect to the areas of competence of this organization. Indeed, perhaps we may want to interrogate or get into a discussion as to modalities that we did discuss. We did put it to the Auditor General, in particular in our discussions with them, that it is important that when we do an audit and analysis of IDT that we do a consistency approach as to whether the agreement that we signed with them was valid within the law. I must say here, Chairperson, I as the Commissioner, National Commissioner, Accounting Officer, that agreement was based on the principles of the law. I'm yet to be informed as to whether I have signed that agreement or we as a department engage with this organization unlawfully. It might be that the principles upon which we're being assessed on is seen as it is non-compliance. I want to put it here on record that the agreement that was signed is similar to any other agreement that IDT in word and letter and content. I therefore believe in my humble submission here that the department has not done anything untoward. I'll be the first person to admit, because when that contract is signed, various stakeholders participate. because as an accounting officer, you are informed duly as to the validity and the importance of what you sign. I have not signed any document without a prior privy to being informed as to whether it has gone through by other stakeholders. And I must admit that we feel that the role of the IDT is a panacea to some of the problems that Department of Public Works is able to deal with. Because it is important, therefore, to indicate that without the IDT as an agency, most government departments would not be in a position to deliver on capital projects. And we believe that thus far, with the projects that we've engaged with IDT, the deliverables are very clear, tangible, and when you go there, you'll see what is being done. I'm not sure as to the context under which this issue needs to be discussed, but as an accounting officer, I'm fully accountable to the relationship that we have with the IDT. I'm not sure whether the issues that have been raised by Member of Parliament, Mam Wenya, have been responded to, and if there is a follow-up on this matter, I am keen to engage. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, they respond that is not the question that was not responded is the question of the time frame. I didn't get the time frame. I got the planning of the project you have. Is that it is on place? The target set is on place of monitoring system, but I didn't get the response in terms of the time frame. When is going to? What is the time frame? Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The electronic monitoring time frame, the pilot project is ending end of March, and the route for electronic monitoring is from April 2013. That rollout will be informed also by the result of the evaluation that is going to take place now in October. Thank you, Chair. But Chair, if also you allow me to go back to that question of the victims, the project that we are busy with its specification currently is an audiovisual system. And we also have the members of the Bureau Court talking about victims' empowerment during the community meetings that is in Israel. So we also, in some of the regions, in COMCO offices, community corrections offices, where it's possible, assist with transporting the victims to make their presentations. Thank you, Chair.
Can I ask a follow-up on the IDP, please?
Just noted, sir, we'll come to you. You can follow it up. I just don't want it because then we will whatever, but I do know. I just wanted to raise one thing, because you said we must understand you on it, and the AG is here. You know, we specifically asked, Commissioner, for your department to give us a list of irregular expenditure, which they did. The annual report, Commissioner, you signed on the 31st of May, 2012. You signed the Commission. In that report, it talks about irregular expenditure. Deviation from competitive bidding processes. That report talks about it, an IDT. And the AG picked it up. There are clear laws in terms of the supply chain management, clear processes to follow. There was a deviation in this case. Now when you stand here and you say to us that somebody must explain what have you done wrong, AG is saying you did not comply with the supply chain management. Or are you disputing that? Because that's why we get them here and that is why they're here. We are not here. If you're disputing the fact that you deviated from supply chain management, say so that we can challenge those young men who put it in the annual report and on that basis Mambrenya asked the question. I think that's what accountability is about. Did you or did you not deviate from supply chain management principles when you went to the IDT the awarding of the IDT. Did you or didn't you? And AG, you need to defend your statement. Because you're the one that's saying to us they deviated. We need you to explain why are you saying there was a deviation. So that we as committee members can then take your argument and take the department's argument and make up our own ideas as members of parliament whether there was in fact deviation or no deviation. Commissioner, please, through whoever, Commissioner, in terms of this IDT, because that's the one that Mamgwenya is, and Musa from the AG's office, if you want to talk to this matter, talk to, so that we are not left in a grey area. Thanks, Commissioner, or CFO, it doesn't matter.
And thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Where we were sitting with the SDCS, we were arguing for maybe that we did not deviate SDCS. What actually happened? DCS signed the agreement with MOA with IDT. That agreement, it was saying we need to do the transfer payment. What does it mean? We need to transfer funds as we agreed in tranches to IDT. Then IDT starts a bidding process. IDT was supposed to do the bidding process. And IDT did those bidding process. And then FDS, as in terms of the agreement, we transfer funds as it was agreed. And then out of that bidding process, then at the end, AG said, you guys, you did not comply with the treasury regulation. But the argument is IDT, they got their own policy. IDT was the one who was advertising. DCS, what is the argument is saying? On a quarterly basis, IDT needs to report to the department how they spend the money that is being transferred to them. That's what the argument is saying. Now, that was the argument. Chairperson, it's one of the things that led to the extension of the audit. Because as in your opening remarks, you asked why the financial statements, some of the things were not changed, some of the things were material changed. It's among these issues where there is a gray area, where there is a really gray area. 8 years they are sitting here. Even on the 15th of August, we are still arguing between us, trying to find what is the actual correct around about this issue. If I can mention about the IDT, you will not even the financial statement. You talk about the 77 million on the prepayment note. That one, as we are sitting here, it really, I'm not in a position to say AG themselves, They interpret correctly. I will say why I said that. Because we are still engaging with the treasure around this issue. Because they are the owners of the PFMA. This letter of saying we need to disclose in terms of section treasury regulation 15.10.2.1, it talks about the prepayment to say you need to disclose the prepayment, you need to avoid the prepayment, unless if you sign with the service provider. But the IDT is not a service provider. It's the agent, it's a government agent. But the PFMA is talking about. That's why we argue with IDT.
Commissioner, thank you. Let me just, you see, let's use that logic that you're talking about. First of all, explain to us what's happening. My understanding is that you took money, you gave money to IDT to do something for us. Because you can't do it. But you don't do that with CETA. CETA does the work first, and then you pay them. You don't do it with anybody else. You didn't do it with Public Works. Public Works did the work, and that's why you argue here that you don't have the invoices for Public Works and those type of things. Why in this case do you say, here's money, go and do it and come in account? You see, I asked Mr. Bisa last week, in the event that we find out that there has been some maladministration with this money that you've given to DTI, I mean to ADT. Who is accountable? You are now saying that you've outsourced that responsibility. We are not going to outsource our oversight because we gave this money to you. We gave this money to you. That you took it to IDT or DTI or anybody else and who accounts to some other portfolio committee, we are not going to outsource our oversight. And unless I'm not understanding this thing, everybody else, you do work and then you give them the money. In this case, you say, here's a sum of money and go to work. Surely, these members here have a right to ask the question, why? Surely, they have the right to ask the question, why? And I'm just saying to you, explain it to us in simple language. What is the status? And Commissioner, your opening words were, we don't have the capacity, and we gave it to those people. Well, you don't have the capacity for IT. And you don't give that money to FISA. You don't have the capacity for building of Kimberley Prison. And you don't give that money to DPW upfront. You give it to them on invoices. Why in this case are you giving them upfront? Why in this case are you giving it to them upfront? And come to us and say to us, well, we can explain this. We are not accepting that unless there's something that is very convincing why that money had to be given before the work was done. But I want to allow you, AG, to explain to us why is this thing, in your terms, we'll come to you. I said we will do. Why in your terms do you think, why in your terms do you categorize this as a deviation from treasury regulations? Why did you do that? So we can just get to the bottom of this thing. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. May I just ask my colleagues to respond to the details? Sorry.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair and Nema. Firstly, I'd like to mention that before we come at this forum, our report gets discussed with the Department for Factual Correctness. So what I sense here is sort of a disagreement with or rather misunderstanding of our finding, so for which I wasn't actually sure about. I thought Auditor General and the Department of Correctional Services sat down on every finding that we actually put in an audit report and we agreed on the factual correctness. But anyway, what we mentioned in terms of contravention of treasury regulation, it's like if you give somebody money to do or conduct your supply chain. But now, at the end of the day, if that person hasn't followed proper treasury regulations, whose money is getting paid, the department's money. So in that light, we came to conclusion to say now, from your pockets, an amount of this much has been spent for which the supply chain process has not been properly followed. So that's how we came to a conclusion. So at the end of the day, it was the record is appearing in the report of the Department of Correctional Services. So they have to actually take some measures to ensure that they actually avoid instances of similar issue from occurring going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, mine is a very simple question that flows from this. As I understand, the PFMA makes provision for an open and transparent tender system. Okay. Now, one of the, as the National Commission has pointed out, one of the tenders that is being, one of the projects that are being handled by IET is the security fencing program phase 2, which is a contract worth nearly R500 million. Now, I looked for the tender gazette in order to find out whether the general public was aware that this tender had been advertised. I could find no record of it there. So I'm struggling to find out whether the tender process in this particular case was open and transparent, because the obvious danger is that even if the IDT is the efficient implementation agent, there is always the possibility that if it is not open and transparent, contracts can be given to people without an open and transparent tender process having been followed. And I just want to know whether or not that was compliant with the PFMA.
Chairperson, I want to put it on record that yes, when the department decided in taking in this particular route, we looked at all variants that are possible. The tender did appear as advertised by the IDT in the newspaper. In the newspaper. Well, tenders do, it was in the newspaper. Bear in mind the CFO has indicated that the process that we're following were those purely led by the IDT. As whether it appeared in the government gazette is a different story, that I'll submit. But be as it may, we need to put it on record that it did appear in the newspaper. It was advertised like any other tender in accordance to their processes. The issue of transparency, as you're saying, it is indeed a matter that we dealt with. Because when this matter was brought to our attention that we had an agency of state that can deal with this matter, they had to comply with the process of transparency of having this thing on tender. Now, we agree, we disagree on the issue of government gazette. I certainly say I did not see, because I did not review that, because they were given authority to deal with the processes within their own processes. That's what I would like to say. But I want to say, Chairperson, on this matter of IDT, if IT as an agency of state has its own procurement process, supply chain management, and the department is found to be at fault in the manner in which we have approached this matter, it is important therefore for National Treasury also to have a regulation as to what are the measures and the standards that the Department of Public Works with respect to agency it should be following. Because the very same tender processes or the very same agreement that we have signed is signed by other government departments, similar procedures and processes. We're not questioning the legitimacy and the questions that are being raised here, but we're simply following a process that has been done by other government departments. I might hasten to indicate the Department of Justice, where a similar contract terms and conditions as we have to the tune of $1.5 billion, same contract. And I agree with you, Chairperson, the issue of transparency, where we do give money in advance to do what is expected of the state and whose authority is that money accountable for. That we do take cognizance of. But we're premised by the fact that the same agency has been able to do a number of activities with government entities on the same terms and conditions. We might have erred on the question or said that we wanted things to be done, but we did not abdicate our responsibilities in respect to what wanted to be done. And I have to say to the auditor and other present here, we're not casting aspersion on anybody here. What we need to be able to do is to find common ground in order to address this matter. If this is not the correct manner of addressing this matter, therefore we need all go to the drawing box together with National Treasury and be able to find an accommodative manner to deal with this matter. Because we certainly feel and believe that from a legal perspective, given the fact that we followed letter and our legal department went into the process. I just want to put it on record, Chair, that we take cognizance of the decision and the apprehension of the committee here. But we don't want to be seen to be as reckless leadership that is doing things for the expediency of things happening in the department. If we are at fault, we certainly need to get a condolment for this matter. Because we are dealing with issues of security, and we are dealing with issues that need to be addressed in the whole face of business. I'm saying, as the department, every time this decision was taken, it was informed by the objective conditions that were there on the table. And if we have to withdraw and make an apology, so we shall do so. But we are not cut aspersion on anybody on this matter. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask the question too. Through the annual report, Commissioner, I won't divert. The report shows that 30 dedicated facilities, unit to house offenders, serving sentence of less than 24 months, were identified nationally. Where are the facilities? When is the department planning to migrate offenders to these facilities? That is my question. Another question. The department mentioned that it has serving under goods and service on animal, on animal production, and as such, we transferred as funds were transferred to administration, as the analyst has been saying. What the department will do to fix the broken aperture in Zonderfontein, another question, amongst other strategy to deal with assault in correctional centers is the installation of the intercom system and panic buttons. When is the department planning to install this equipment to prevent the assault inside to the cell? Another question, and also the cost around that, and if there is any cost, and how much? My last question, Chair. The other one has been asked very much on it, so I can't ask that. And then this one, the system of electronic monitoring was launched in February 2012. And how many parolees and provisions have been tagged with the monitoring system currently? And what are the time frame to roll out this nationally? And the last question I share, it speak about this mother and child. In Posmo and in Tabernwesi. So it happened, Chairperson, the former minister explained to us that this equipment of mother and child here in Posmo, what happened is that they just called the minister to open the mother and child, and then as it opened, and then as the minister go away, and then when he got to come back or he sent someone to come back, there is nothing there. The bed that was put there is nothing. So what I want to know that about the mother and child, I want to know that did you find it? If you find it, how much is well implemented, and then everything is goes accordingly. There is only that, Chair. I thank you.
Thanks, for the questions. He will be answered by CDC remand detention on the remand detention centers that have identified. And also the colleague will respond on the animal production, the transfer of funds. Colleague will respond on the issues of assaults. Electronic monitoring has been responded to. So far to say that my colleagues will be able to repeat that. On the mother and baby unit, the COO may want to, because it was under her care, to respond to that. But she will respond to all these matters. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. The issue of the 30 dedicated facilities for offenders that are sentenced less than 24 months, may I request to provide that information in writing? Suffice to say, it's centered across the country and some of them are already functioning as such. But with me right now, I don't have the details. Say this one is already functioning, this one has just been identified and so on. I will make an undertaking to provide that information in writing to the committee. The issue of the mother and baby facilities, I can confirm to this committee that both the mother and baby facility of Portsmouth and the one in Seven Westville are fully functional. The issue of funding, members would recall that we transferred mothers and babies who were already accommodated itself, who were already budgeted for in terms of their meals and other stuff that they would need access to. So it's just allocating that same amount to the mother and baby unit where they've been put. In terms of the other stuff that we do not necessarily have, we had quite a good response from communities, from the private sector, in terms of donating some of the equipment, including fridges, televisions, and microwaves, which the process to receive those donations was followed. So we do not have a separate budget as if it's a new function, because it's a function that has been rendered by the Department of Correctional Services. It's just that we had to consider a drastic change in terms of the way babies are kept when they are in our facilities. So the issue of the unit that was closed was resolved, and that unit is currently fully functional.
Thank you very much, members of parliament. With regard to the butchery at Donderwater, members would remember when we did oversight visit at Donderwater, there were a number of artisans busy there renovating that entire facility. The butchery is now fully operational, and we are slaughtering chickens there for offender ration. The other point that was raised by the honorable member with regard to the intercom system and panic button, I would like to report that the second phase of the tender for security fences had also in it, as part of that, the intercom system in all our correctional facilities. And because of the fact that the budget that we had could not accommodate all of those activities, it had then now been shifted to a second phase of that tender. So once funds have been allocated, it shall also be looked into. But what is important that the Member of Parliament is raising is panic buttons, which have to be installed in all our correctional facilities for the benefit of offenders while locked in our correctional centers in town. The department, through its budgeting process, has also made the point that we budget for the installation of panic buttons at our correctional facilities, which in the course of this year shall also be installed at particular institutions. Unfortunately, the budget that once received could not accommodate all of our facilities. But we have identified those facilities, especially where assault of offenders is very rife and gangsterism is at a very high level, to start installing panic buttons at those centers. Thanks.
Commissioner, before you answer, you're not hearing panic buttons for the first time myself in this argument. Have you really thought about what you are doing? Have you thought about it? This is a cell with lots of gangsters. There's a panic button in the corner there. My understanding is that somebody's going to press that panic button so that there can be intervention. Amgwenya has raised forever the fact after lock-up, it doesn't matter what you do. It's lock-up, you can't get into there. Now, when you answer the question of panic, I'm hearing it for the first time, maybe other people have heard it, but we certainly have to discuss it, because please explain to us what are you hoping to achieve by putting a panic button into a cell of 50 people. What is it that you're hoping to achieve? Or is it again something that we're putting in there, and after a year when it doesn't work, we say, well, we tried something and it hasn't worked. We don't want to micromanage you, but surely the fact that we've been looking and debating about surveillance in cells, I think members, and I'm not sure if I'm wrong, say that to me. I think this is something that we should have been discussing, but what are we trying to achieve by putting those things there? So when you respond, say, if you could tell us, what is it that you're trying to achieve by putting panic buttons inside the cell?
Chair, my question was going to be different. I'll perhaps waiver to respond to that, because I was going to respond. Yes. No. The issue that is raised by Ngwenyi is the issue of facilities in the main. I think we have not responded adequately to this matter. And therefore, being allowed the opportunities that we having facilities that are dilapidated, and we also have equipment that is outmoded and old. Therefore, making offender labor, which is a passion of Double Upper and the committee as a whole. I just want to indicate that the dilapidation that we see in our facilities, given the fact that they have not been attended to from a maintenance perspective properly, is also a challenge. But most seriously is the issue of offender labor that is handicapped by the fact that most of our workshops are not working effectively and efficiently, despite the fact that there are limitations in terms of how many people can work. We want to put to the committee here that it's something that we're working towards, and the minister also is supporting this, which we have said before, but it would seem as if it's a scratch record that keep on happening continuously. I want to inform and assure the chairperson here in the committee that we're doing everything possible that before the end of this financial year that a trading account is opened. I can assure this committee that the business case that has been provided to me has been looked into, the slight change that needs to be made in terms of modification. What is not before chairperson is that there is a need for us to approach National Treasury outside the budget board that we have. Because if we want to have effective and efficient facilities that are functioning, there is a need for us to do a recapitalization of our facilities. In the first phase, the recapitalization of all the equipment, especially machinery, either in the workshops or in agriculture per se, including, of course, that which Ms. Moody said, talking about the abattoirs and the like. It's very key in the sense that if we don't do that, we shall not have warm bodies dealing with the issues of agricultural productivity and offender labor effectively. The roller effect, the roller coaster effect, the impact of having this in our facility chair is something that we've seen, also confirmed by the study that we've seen, that we've conducted. If we're able to have the trading account functional, it will deal with the double-headed problem of re-offending our society. Because we'll have an offender whose statement has changed, who has something to his name or her name that he will be able to take after completing all that sentence. And I'm not talking about rocket science here. It's something that I do with passion in the belief that it is possible. Therefore, we would like, therefore, when we present this thing to National Treasury, the portfolio committee should be behind our back to support us in order to have this project being approved as quickly as possible. But it will mean that there will have to be additional funding in order for us to be able to deal with issues of procurement of the additional equipment for recapitalization. Chair, if you go to Zona Rwanda, colleagues will confirm with you. There's an additional facility with additional bed space. That has been there live for years, and that needs to be looked into, and we've done a study that it is possible for us to be able to upgrade that facility and be able to dedicate some of those defenders who are what's called medium level to deal with issues of production. Now, if that is the case, therefore the issues of facilities per se is something that we can deal with, and certainly to address the issues that we have spoken to on offender labor being the primary driver, as it can be done in any other country. And it becomes a source of revenue for the state and also for the department. And therefore I would like to wish that we deal with this matter in the manner of support, that when we submit it, we'll give you a copy, that you see the fundamentals of the financial projection that will emanate out of this. Thank you.
No follow-up.
Thank you, Chairperson. My questions were, most of them will be under Program 4 that you have. I think the purpose of this program is the maintenance of the well-being of the prisoners. But I'm surprised when I read the annual report of JIC. It says a period of 3 months lapse without any doctors in some of these centers. What could be the cause? And I understand that there is a shortage of skilled like pharmacists in some of the centers. I think something must be done concerning that, because even medication, I understand that it takes longer for some medication to reach centers because of transport problems, something like that. What are you doing concerning that? My second question will be, one target that's not met for inmates that are HIV positive, those with CD4 counts, that is 350 on and below. Why is that so? Because this is a life-threatening disease. Why are you doing that? Why are you not distributing this ARVs to these people that need so much of it? Then my other question will be the finding by Bajiks would say there are 29 remand detainees that are waiting trial for over the period of 5 years, of which in my understanding is too long, and 2,470 that have been waiting for 2 years. What could be the cause? I know that there are many stakeholders in this case. Don't you have a platform where together sit and discuss this? Because I think it's not normal for a person to wait for his trial for 5 years. Just normal. Then my last one will be based on the presentation by the commissioner where he said that an abuse of sick leave and due to resistance to change, alcohol abuse, just to mention a few. What is the department doing to address this problem? Are there any disciplinary measures that are taken or counseling or rehabilitation? We didn't hear on those ones. You only told us that these are happening, but don't tell us what the department is doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me answer the last part of the question. Thanks, ma'am, for raising the last aspect on the abuse of leave. The measures that were put in place is that we have already employed somebody on employee wellness, because it's good to look at the problem without dealing with the causes thereof. We have employed somebody to deal with these issues, to do an analysis and also make follow-up to deal with the issues that affect the abuse of leave. But certainly, it is broader than the employee wellness program. It has to do with the conditions of employment, the environment in which we operate. But certainly, it's something that the incumbent will have to deal with and provide with strategies towards solving this particular phenomenon. I want also to deal with the issue of the leaks on medication. Colleague will respond to this in collaboration. I sincerely believe, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, that correctional services should not deal with issues of health in a piecemeal form, because we don't have facilities that deal with issues of health. We don't have facilities that are able to deal with problems that face our inmates. And it also is an indictment, because if we are unable to provide ARVs to people who are not well, we are not also adhering to the term of humane incarceration of offenders. But I don't want to dwell on this matter, but I think it is important that going forward that on all transversal responsibility of state that we should work together with the Department of Health. We have met with the DG of Public Health, in order for us to be able to address some of the issues that you're mentioning here. Because the absence of medication and facilities is also a problem, because it takes a long time for us to be able to get this medication to our facilities. But if this competence lies with the Department of Health and they're able to understand that we do have a population of our inmates who are, then it becomes something very expedient for them to be able to deliver on time. But because it's a process of excellence here and there, it's not something that is urgent in the nature of things. It's because they're dealing with a community outside the broad spectrum of the general population of South Africa. I would like to indicate that the 79 people that you mentioned who are in remand detention facilities, my CDC remand detention will be able to speak to as to why it has taken long and without customer space, but the Correctional Services Amendment Act will deal with this.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you for that question. Indeed, there's a huge concern about people awaiting trial for a long period. And especially if you're looking at figures over 5 years, it doesn't show a good light. We must remember that it's the mandate of the DCS to implement court decisions. So when people arrive at facilities with a valid 7 warrant, what we need to do is keep them with us. We do, however, as you say, have forums where we take these on. We have within the JCPS cluster several forums where we discuss these issues. But more importantly, for issues of people awaiting trial for a long period, these are dealt with at a local case flow management meetings that take place in all of the areas. We do take up issues on a higher level if they become an issue. And as the Commissioner has mentioned, the Correctional Matters Amendment Act will deal very specifically with people that are waiting trial longer than 2 years. This section is not yet implemented, but once it is, the section will force the courts to really look at whether somebody needs to continue to be detained. I'd just like to emphasize, it doesn't mean that we obviously release people that are there for longer than 2 years. It's still a decision by the court. But it gives DCS the possibility to put an application before the court to say, this person has now been detained for this period of time, and for the court to then consider, is it still valid to keep this person detained, considering the impact on his life by detaining him for such a long period of time. So that's where we're at currently. But yes, we do follow it up on a regular basis with the other departments in the cluster.
Anyone else
want to
move in?
Thank you, Mr. President. I've got no follow up.
Thank you.
Chairperson, follow up on care. Chair, I'm worried about the professional in correctional service in terms of health. So I wanted to know from the department that what are they going to attract these professionals to come to correctional service? Chair was talking about this every time, even in our debate. So what I ask Chairperson to talk one thing, but there's nothing is happening. Can the department explain, Chairperson, when are they going to attract the professionals in terms of health to come to our department? Even education is the same thing. We've got this challenge of the professional chair, social workers and all that. Always we talk about this on our debate, Chairperson. So I want the department to tell us when are they going to attract them. And in terms of the challenge of overcrowding, since I started in this department in 2005, we're talking about overcrowding. When is the department going to do something that is going to make us to stop to talk about overcrowding? When we go to oversized Chairperson, you'll find that a cell that is accommodating 50 people is accommodating Chairperson 1,000 people that are sitting like a substance chair. Can the department explain all those questions?
Thank you very much. Commissioner, when you responded to sick leave, you said that you have counseling and that type of thing. Now your colleagues sit with us when we have stakeholder meetings. You know, your own labor force said to us that it doesn't matter what you do. As long as you don't change the conditions under which they work. The fact that they are short, I think they mentioned 18,000 or something like that. This thing is going to persist. So, and this is what your labor force is saying to us. And these young men were there. We expect that they would go to you and say, do you know what? This is what our labor force is saying. Let's find a way of resolving it, either discussing it with us and so on. I'm just asking the question. You know, we seem, and I think Mabwenya is making the point, we're doing the same thing and we expect different results. She's saying since 2005 you've been here, or 2009, and you've been hearing about overcrowding. But I'm saying we do the same thing and we expect a different result. You're saying we're going to come consult and we're expecting that the sick leave abuse is going to be eradicated, when your own members are saying it's not going to happen. Let's talk about the staff complement. When they raised it with us, we immediately went to Treasury. You know, you were the people that came to us and said to us, Treasury said that you can't appoint more people. We went to do some homework. Treasury never ever said you can't appoint people. Treasury said go and cut costs. You took the decision that the best way to cut costs is to cut staff. Treasury never ever said cut staff. You took the decision, and every time you come to us and you say to us, no, but we can't appoint 21,000 people because Treasury said we can't. And we went because we want to help you.
And all our correspondence shows that Treasury said cut costs and not necessarily those employees. That's the paperwork that we are having. So Mangwena is absolutely correct. We cannot do this without fixing up the HR part of the business. How long are we going to say that there's not enough social workers? I think somebody asked last week, you know, some people don't go on parole. I think it was in your presentation, inspecting that. Some people don't go on parole because there's not enough social workers. So the inmate is punished because DCS is not employing people. It can't be right. It just cannot be right. I don't know that we must have the discussion, ma'am. I just think that it needs a whole discussion on its own. Because we're not going to do justice to it here. And you can't continue to come and give us this answer. We need to find a way of saying, this is how it is. It has an implication on many people's lives. People are becoming alcoholics because they're working long hours. And I'm going to ask about the 7-day establishment. People are not going on parole because you don't have enough people. HR is a matter that we need to sit and look at. Seriously look at it. Because it has implications. So I'm hoping, Mamgwena, that we just leave this on. Let's have a whole discussion on this thing. Because I know people will be saying, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. But every time Inspecting Dutch comes, he raises these type of questions. I'm hoping that we just leave that one. Let we develop a strategy together, all of us. What is the requirement? What are the hindrances? And how do we take this process forward? Mamgwena.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is on page 47. Annual report. We talk of the majority of alleged assault that only inmates, only inmates, 83%. Page 47. 83% inmates on inmates. 70% on staff on inmates. But it doesn't say anything about inmates on staff. How many inmates that are allegedly assaulting staff members. And also it talks of the retraining of officials. When is it going to happen, this retraining? And how much is the funding for that retraining? Then we go to page 92. On page 92, on material losses, I just want to find out, because we talk of 5 million rand that of the state vehicle that has been damaged. I just want to find out if there is a policy or a permit for a person to drive these vehicles. And if there is a permit or a policy, what happens to a person that has damaged the vehicle? Because to me, this is a lot of money. Then there's 195, page 195. Yeah, on page 195, labor relations, type of misconduct. We talk of mismanaging the finances of the state. I just want to find out what happens to these people that are doing the thing, because it is there. And also the permission to possess, without permission, possesses or wrongfully uses the property of the state. How does this happen? Because there are people who are in charge, who are supervising. How does this happen? And what happens to the supervisors who are supervising those people who are doing these things? Then let me go to the last one, page 200. On page 200, at the top there, project title, we talk of consultants that are being asked by the department to do some jobs. I just want to find out these people that have been trained or are going to be trained for occupational health and safety representatives, firefighters. Are these new recruits or are going to take the staff that are already in the department? Then lastly, we talk of the foreigners that are employed by the department. I just want to find out, is it because we are short of people to do those particular jobs? I'm not trying to put an office, but I just want to find out. But what is the reason? Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Shazi. The various questions
the one on page 47 would be to, on the assaults, it would be collections. The one on material losses would be the CFO, labor relations with the HR, and of course consultants, it's cross-section, it would be both HR and IT in particular. But I would like the colleagues that I've mentioned to deal with those. But the COO would like to take a step on one of the questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. And honorable members, I will answer the first question that deals with assault in NATO officials. For the year that is covered by this annual report, the figure that we have for NATO official assault is 165 incidents that have been reported, which is 3.12%. And in terms of the training of officials, we are currently training our officials. We recently also got funding from SICA to upgrade the training of our officials, and there's a training module that we are busy with to be able to empower our EFT officials, our emergency support teams, so that they can be able to respond to such incidents as and when they happen, whether it's in Midon officials or in Midon inmates. It's incidents that we need to control. Thank you.
Dr. Chairperson, in terms of on page 22, the material losses. If the honourable member was able to see that first million is relating to the previous years, but what I would like to say, what the department has implemented, the department has last year was fully engaged to retrain those people that are driving the government vehicles, and ensure that those people who are driving the government department, they read the license to drive those cars of the government. And also on a continual basis, what the department is still doing at the moment is to do the full audit of the transport to ensure that those cars are in the proper state, and then the cases that are already which were pending, to make sure that those cases are fully investigated and the people who were involved, and then they get punished. That's what is the department on at this point in time. Thank you.
Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. With respect to page 195, one of the offences listed there is mismanagement of state finances. I would respectfully request that the head of HR be allowed to look specifically into these offences, the 11 people that are cited here, and in essence determine what sanction they received, because from the information that we have, only 183 people were dismissed. And there's a range of other sanctions that were issued, ranging from suspension without pay. I would request the chairperson that I be allowed to react back in terms of what happened to the 11 persons who are cited as having committed the type of misconduct. Yes, I think the first person perhaps to be reminded of the question. My understanding was that it was the one that the first one does comply with or contravenes an act, regulation, or legal obligation. If the honourable member can perhaps assist with that specific type of misconduct.
Yes, yeah. 194. I ask about they say without permission, possess or wrongful use of the property of the state. another employee and or a visitor, how does this happen? And what happens to the supervisors who are actually supervising the very same officials that are abusing or misusing the property? Thanks.
Chairperson, ordinarily when an investigation is being conducted, you do get to a point where if a supervisor has failed to exercise oversight, that the person also gets charged with having failed to exercise oversight. Because some of the offenses or misconduct that are reflected here would, by implication or by extension, also refer to persons who are meant to supervise or manage the person who has conducted that. Just to give an example of a matter in Johannesburg where an offender was released a couple of months ago. Now, the supervisor was then charged as well with having failed to exercise due diligence in terms of ensuring that the standard operating procedures are followed. For instance, this person was released for a period of 3 months. And it was only discovered when they were meant to appear in court that, in fact, this person has not been within the system because they were released by another court. Now, both the person who was meant to count or to do a physical count of the offenders that are coming back from court was charged. And over and above that, the person, the head offender, was also charged in respect of failing to exercise oversight, that how can, over a period of 3 months, you are not aware that one of the high-profile offenders has not been accounted for. But again, Chairperson, I would indicate that in much the same as the case of 11 people that we referred earlier on, in respect of the state in Dibola also would need to come back and indicate what actually were the sanctions that were eventually meted out.
If I can answer that one, the training for firefighters and the safety representatives and first aiders is a statutory training that is done in terms of Occupational Safety Act, and those people are people who are appointed and nominated by the organization in terms of that act, and it's people already in the system who are employees of the organization who are then trained in those areas. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, it's the one that appears on 4.8, I think it's page 191.
Yeah.
Chair, I would not want to have the guess here. I really would want to be honest with the portfolio committee, say I don't want to go down and live here and indicate why these people were recruited in the first place. Because if it is an issue of scarcity of skills, you have to then go and follow the trail to even get to a point of Department of Home Affairs, because if a person has to come in and obtain a work permit, there has to be a submission that is then done to indicate that the kind of skills that the person is bringing into DBS are not obtainable within the organization.
Thanks to the CDC for not taking a guess, because it would be an indictment on us. My sense, Chair, on this matter, may relate, I'm saying may guidedly, to consultants in the IT sphere, in the main. Because you recall we reported to yourselves some time back that we had a number of consultants in the IT sphere. And in the report of the auditor general of the previous years, it did indicate that we did have people, and when we did an audit, we found out that some of the people who were working in that environment were foreigners. We'll need to do an audit again here to find out as to whether we still have those people in that environment. I'll therefore request my CDCHR and GITO to do a scrutiny on this matter. Secondly, if it's periodic and that it's a skill that's not available in South Africa, it had to be very, very high-level skill. But certainly, we did have a number of foreigners working in our IT sphere in the past. So I think it might be the remnants of some of these people who might not be qualified. I just want to venture to say that.
Thank you.
Well, let's go into this page 191. Who's reading page 191 when you answer it? Who is reading that thing? It says 14 people. It says 11 of those 14 are chaplains. No, I'm saying this is what this document is saying. You're saying 11 of those 14 are chaplains, they are professionals. People are saying to us, you are going to go and investigate, find out whether they're IT professionals or whatever they are. If this is your document. The reason why I'm telling us this question is because how can a chaplain, if this document is correct, how do you justify a chaplain being a scarce field? So, I want to repeat. This document becomes a public document. When members ask questions, that's why we ask them to refer to pages so that we look at it. When you respond to us, you respond to us on the basis that we looked at this document and we studied it. We're not asking this question for the sake of asking it. He's asking the question, why do you appoint 11 foreign preachers. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll answer based on what normally happens. Because these are temporary employees appointed by heads of centers and area commissioners as pastors of individuals that are within the system. Because according to how that process works, is that pastors can be appointed on temporary basis to run programs for specific categories of the denominations that are within. So you may find having foreigners, people who don't speak the language we speak, who have their congregations within the system. And this is the mandate of the heads of centers and area commissioners to appoint people on temporary basis. So that's my understanding of temporary basis, temporary pastors and priests that are being appointed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will deliberate amongst ourselves whether we think that that is the proper process or not. But yeah, at least you're giving us some sort of an explanation that you're getting these people to provide a service to foreign race inmates. That's fine. We will then take it from there. Any further follow-up questions, Mr. Clare?
Yeah, only one, sir. The one that talks of this training. Do we have a policy for the person to drive these cars?
Yes, sir.
To that, yes, an honorable member, that we got a policy. We even have a license that is being issued to drive state vehicles. People get tested and they get a license. In instances where people have become reckless drivers, they pay. The disciplinary process goes, they have to pay back. But there are instances where, in terms of the Treasury regulations, they are covered, that maybe they were negligent or it was not out of willingness and recklessness that the accident happened. Then they are covered by the Treasury regulations that have not lost state cover. It's in those instances where we would have to write off. But sanctions like withdrawing the person and removing them from working in an environment where they are required to use a state vehicle, if we see they are prone to passing accidents. But I think the other measures are those that the CFO spoke to, that you also have to assess the fleet and make sure that the vehicles are roadworthy or are in a good condition, taking into account the roads that we also travel that are very bad in themselves. Thanks.
Hey, Donkey, Kwesider. You know, when I sit there and I listen to so many questions erupt, I've got about 20 different ones. I don't know which one to tackle and which one not. Chairperson, firstly, Comrade Ngubeni asked a very important question about 79 people who are in remand detention for 5 years. The question was not answered. What sort of urgent attention are we going to provide? Can the department commit itself? as to why people are in detention for so long. Have you had any engagements with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development? Because surely there must be something, some stoppage somewhere, something constipated somewhere. Are you going to clear that out? Then, Chairperson, we're talking here of 30 dedicated facilities for offenders who are serving less than 24 months. Now, Chairperson, the fact that the person has been sentenced for 24 months makes it quite clear that the offences, I don't want to call any offence a petty offence, Commissioner. An offence is an offence. But I take it that they are not serious offence where violence was involved or that sort of thing. Now, Chairperson, why should we be spending money on dedicated facilities to provide for such offenders? Should we not be looking at alternative forms? Some custodial sentence or something, community service or that sort of thing. I seem to get the impression, Chair, that we are not thinking out of the box. And we need to do that, Chair. The gang management strategy. I mean, our children are being decimated, especially here in the Western Cape. And of course, those gangsters end up as your customers. And they seem to become even more violent when they're inside, if one looks at what happens outside. It seems to be orchestrated from there. Now, Chairperson, there has been talk about a strategy that's to be implemented. Now we don't hear of any results. We don't hear anything about what's happening. Is it a question of we merely talk? Can you perhaps give us a list of centers where this is a endemic problem, and what are we doing about it? Then, Chairperson, when I think I'd like, I am a farmer on the verge of retiring from farming. I've had enough. But I want to warn this house that food security in our country is being severely compromised. I spoke to officials of the Department of Rural Development. And I told them that, guys, we have people who have a dedication while incarcerated, shown a flair for doing something. Farming is a noble profession. To help feed the nation is a noble job. And that what you should be doing, Commissioner, is engaging other departments so that the people that leave your centers and who have built some skills or developed some skills are able to be utilized, especially in rural development projects. A lot can be done, Chairperson. I'm the first one to admit that, in a department where you have half a dozen DGs in 3 years, and that's the Department of Agriculture, I don't expect any leadership or any flair for doing something. Because the incumbent acting DG doesn't know how long will he be there. So you're not going to see something happening. You will have to grasp the nettle, Mr. Commissioner, because other departments are thinking of doing agricultural development and they see this department as a possible customer. Now that shouldn't be so. You should be creating your own food. And when I see here that during the 2011-12 year, we have had problems with dilapidated machinery and facilities and stuff. Chairperson, that's just not acceptable. It is not acceptable that we have dilapidated equipment and we cannot utilize our inmate labor to their full potential. Because whilst in one center we were told that the people don't want to work in agriculture, there are other centers where there's a passion for agriculture. And yes, you've spoken here of chaplains and what have you. I'm prepared to go and chaplain the young people there and tell them why they need to help to grow food. Because, Chairperson, you are going to see a massive unrest in our country if we don't sort our agriculture out. And your facilities is going to be some of the most vulnerable places that this sort of thing is going to happen. You need to pay more attention to that. We've spoken here, we've heard Jefferson in the past about the training entity. Mr. Commissioner, get on with the job. Get it going. You have people there whom we are wasting. Those people are very innovative. And there are people that are guiding them to become more innovative. And we need to utilize them so that they can produce something worthwhile and also get something back at the end of the day. You will have to purchase ingredients in order to feed the inmates. Yes, they can do the cooking inside, but you will have to get the ingredients from outside if you are not going to try to be as self-sufficient as possible. Chairperson, the other problem is that 27 million rand was spent on the PPPs. What I would like to see, Chairperson, and this is what I'm asking, we would like to know exactly on what did we spend it. Those PPPs were then withdrawn. We stopped them. Thank God for that. But we need to know to whom did we pay the 27 million, consultants or whatever. Chairperson, I don't think we're going to have a second round because it's already past 12. But I want to finish up with one or two questions here. The Auditor General's report, you alluded to it when I was coming in here this morning. You already alluded to it, Chair. But what I want from the accounting officer, Chair, is that there are several issues raised here. If I'm going to go through them all and ask questions and all of these, I'll take the whole thing. What we need is, in each instance, where where the Auditor General's office has red flagged it, we need to have a written response to this Auditor General's comments. Because, Chairperson, it is time the DOC grasps the nettle, the DOC starts working strictly by the book. We need to know what is their response. The Commissioner tried to give a generalized answer. That is not good enough. We will have to have specific responses on everything that the DG has red flagged. And we need to have a plan of action from the department as to how they intend going about it so that in the 2012-13 year, where you've only got 6 months left, well, this month half of it is gone already, so you've got 5.5 months left, and at the end of this financial year, the statement that we will see next year, and that will be the last one this parliament will see, We'll have to show a marked improvement. Finally, Chairperson, with regard to the care facilities and our elderly and infirm inmates, are we seeing to it that we talk here of 100% expenditure, for example, on care facilities? My question is not the fact that you have utilize the entire budget. And I don't want to give you a pat on the back and say, well done, you've spent the money. The question here is, Chairperson, how did we spend it? And unfortunately, there is nothing here, Chairperson, there's no measuring tool, whereby one can say that we spent a million rand on doing ABC, and this has been the outcome thereof. This is how we have benefited the population in there. Our aged and infirm, and there are many of them that we've seen during our visits, are we advising these people about their rights? Remember this document, and I think section 35 2E or something tells you how we are supposed to be taking care of our inmates. The aged and infirm care, we should look at their situation, and we should be able to tell them that, you know, in your particular instance, you are able to do A, B, C, D and request to be heard and apply for parole. Because at the end of the day there, we as a country will be judged by the way we treat our vulnerable people. And those aged and infirm inmates there are our vulnerable people. They are ours. They are ours. They are our people. And we have a responsibility over there. Are you doing? Are you advising them? Thank you very much. And how many of them have we got in the facilities? Question that I asked some months ago. We would like to know. How many such people do we have throughout our facilities? And we need to attend chairperson to these inmates who are there for 24 months. Should we be spending on facilities? Or should we find alternative care? Don't you think that they should be put in the care of their dear ones and loved ones so that they can, they've only been sentenced for 24 months. They can improve in life. Yes, we are going to get some of the bad apples that may come back again. Like one youngster told me, "Mama, hier, het lekkerder voor mij om iets dronk te wees, want ik krijg 3 maaltijden per dag, because outside we've got no food. My family is poor. I don't know where to go to. You're going to live there. But I think we must try and see how we can reintegrate them into their families and give them custodial sentences here. Or it's not your job to give them a custodial sentence. But it is in care that we need to take it up with the Department of Justice. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. The member of Portfolio Committee raised 7 questions. One is 79 remind mention. People are over 5 years, and what have we done and why? The 30 dedicated centers for people less than 24 months, gang management strategy, food security, 27 million on PPP, red flag on written responses, care facilities. Chair, I'll respond to some. One, question number 7 on the red flag on the issues that the Auditor General has mentioned, certainly will respond in writing to the Portfolio Committee as a proposal by the Honourable Member, indicating the issues and the plan of action with respect to mitigate the issues raised by the Auditor General. Okay. Secondly, the other issue, that is the 27 million on the triple P's, which were cancelled by the Department, certainly will do that in writing to provide with a status report as to how that money has been used. But we want to indicate here that the decision of cancellation still remains, but at the same time, alternative mechanisms of providing additional bed space were provided by the Minister, that we shall be building additional bed space using local competence, but not using a private partnership, public-private partnerships, in order to deal with this issue of security. On the issue of food security, we sincerely concur with the member that we do have state-of-the-art facilities that could be in a position to be used to their full potential. But indeed, if we are in a position to do so, we need to recapitalize by having equipment that is functional and equipment that is going to be used to provide self-sufficiency for a number of centers. That we've taken note of, and indeed that is being dealt with through the trading entity that we're talking about, which we shall certainly come back to yourself. I sincerely agree with the member of Portfolio Committee that we do have to deal with the issues in relationship with the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, because agriculture indeed will be one of the areas where we will be able to alleviate our cost competitiveness and provide self-sufficiency by using own resources. And that is happening, but we need to be able to put shoulder to the whole process. With respect to the 79, I think the remand detention, CDC remand detention spoke about it, but I don't think there's nothing that stops us from going back to respond to that. The 30 dedicated centers, who spoke about it? But I need to indicate that the fact that the court still prefer to send those people to 24 months less, it's an issue that it has been raised in the JCPS. And it's also responded to by the Correctional Letters Amendment Act that we cannot have people stay longer than 24 months in our facilities. But certainly, Justice needs a new branch, and therefore they need to be able to peg the act in respect to this particular matter. We also need to approach the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development that the judges should also look into alternative sentencing mechanisms. We are simply recipients of the decisions of the court. If the court says you must go to correctional center to your sentence, we have no option but to accommodate. But certainly this also comes to the core of Mamgwanya's issue of overcrowding. Overcrowding is a perennial problem. It's precisely because the non-custodial sentences does not seem to be a preferred route. by our justice system. I will therefore request colleagues to respond to the gang management strategy, and as the member was asked to deal with this. Dr. Fendi would also have to provide responses on the care facilities correctly. So the previous minister indicated that we need to have dedicated facilities for the elderly and the infirm, and also we need to be able to advise and provide responses as to how many people are in that category. At this point in time, I'm not able to provide, but if colleagues do have the data on that matter, I therefore would like to pause and give my colleagues an opportunity to respond. Thanks, Chair.
I'd like to respond to the issue of the people that we have awaiting trial for a lengthy period of time, and I fully agree that this needs our urgent attention. I think that if we look at solutions to people that are so long awaiting trial, we must also look at the causes. From a correctional services point of view, there's little we can look at in terms of causes, but we do know that people that come to us that have high court cases or that have a substantial number of accused will remain with us for a substantial period of time. But if we look beyond that, also the people that we have longest awaiting trial in the Burumach case, for example, we need to also take account of the fact that the last postponement into the next year was a request for a postponement by the representatives of those accused to argue simply for sentencing. So these are things that happen and that also impact obviously on how long people are awaiting trial. That doesn't mean that we can just sit idly by and not address these things. We certainly do. We have, on a national level, the National Integrated Case Flow Management, which takes place bi-monthly. I have here the report with me, which deals exactly with what we're talking about. What are the real causes that delay these cases, and what are we going to do about it, and who's responsible? Certainly, as it indicated before, we do need to respond to what happens with justice, but certainly we can also engage with justice. And the integrated case flow management attended by the judiciary and attended by representatives from all of the cluster departments. And the list is put out, I'm not going to go through this, but certainly that deals with the detailed causes of the length of detention. One, for example, lack of courtrooms, offices, and parking, and how do we deal with that, the lack of recording machines, and how we are going to deal with that. So there is attention being given to it, and I agree with you, it must get our urgent attention.
Thank you, Chairperson. May we request permission to come back on the issue of the list of facilities where the challenges of gangs is rife. I don't want to cut my thumb now and leave the necessary information out.
I think the point that has been made repeatedly is that you continuously talk about a gang management strategy. Nobody has unpacked that strategy for us. Exactly what it is, when is it going to get rolled out, and by who is it going to get rolled out. So, when you come back to us, come and give us those type of details. And then, I'm not sure if people have answered Abraham's question around the infirm, or you're saying that you're going to bring that in writing to us. I mean, he asked the question, how are we caring for them? I don't know if you've responded to it.
Chair, I did indicate that our facilities are not built in such a manner that they are helpful to our infirm and the aged. I did indicate that because we have old facilities and that has an impact in terms of the humane incarceration, and I therefore indicated that the previous minister and this administration said it is important that we have differentiated facilities for the aged, the youth, and the women. And therefore, when we start building new facilities or we rehabilitate the current facilities, we should have that in our mind. And indeed, it's something that we have taken cognizance of. But I want to indicate that the statistic that she's requesting as to how many people fall in that category, we don't have yet. We'd have to probably give you the responses in writing and fully audited in that respect. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, just that in that report that you are going to send us, tell us what steps are you taking to advise such people, very vulnerable people, about their rights in terms of when they can apply for parole, etc., etc.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say on the previous input of Mr. Makuna with regard to any more concern about the disciplinary proceedings. In 2010, when I joined this committee, it was one of the proposals which I made to the National Commissioner about his code enforcement to centralize it and to manage it from national into regions to overcome this particular problem which the CDC Human Resource was referring to and to address your concern as well. However, with regard to your proposal to ring-fence certain transgressions and with compulsory sanction, it will contribute to consistency in any disciplinary concept. But it strikes law that if there is unduly force or pressure on a presiding officer to impose a particular sanction, it might be set aside at a different level. With regard to the review of a proposal of Mr. Makuna, that for his information, he must read the BMW case and the Portnet cases with regard to double jeopardy. That will give a clear indication about your powers with regard to his intention to have such a thing to review, because fairness is the yardstick in labor law, and it's not only applicable to the employee but also to the employer. So that is just the input which I would like to make. Now I come to the National Commissioner. You know, Chairperson, an unqualified audit should be the norm and not the exception. And I think there's much credibility in our Auditor General in his capacity to oversee the expenditure and the performance, expenditure of taxpayers' monies and the performance of civil servants who are supposed to render services to our people. And if we continue with every year with the same recommendation by the AG, and if you look at the past 3 years, the same issues is being addressed, the same issues is not attended to appropriately. In other words, the exercise by the AG is just an academic exercise. There's no compliance or commitment to comply with it, nor is there consequences for non-compliance. And I just want to ask the National Commissioner, he said in his introduction to the speech that he agreed with the target setting is wrong and it needs to be reviewed. And I want to ask him, when you set that target last year, that 100 and something, of which only 47% were achieved, were you part of that, and did you agree it is achievable? You know? Now, if that is the case, what happened that you didn't achieve those? Is it the type of management, and I will get to the leadership of this department in a while, is it lack of proper management systems? And if so, did you identify it? And if it was negligent on the side of senior people around you, what action taken? What their consequences? Then on page 102 of your annual report, there is compliance with the laws and regulations. Why is it, Commissioner, that your department, your officials, your top management here, responsible, blatantly ignore those laws and regulations which were compiled and adhered with all the efforts to ensure proper compliance and service delivery? Why did you ignore those? Your expenditure management on page 103. Can you explain what happened that 1 million
an increase in irregular expenditure from 1 million in 2010-2011 raised to 214 million rand in 2011-2012. How is it possible? Is it either a finger error by the IG or what is it? Then also, your fruitless and wasteful expenditure from 68,000 in 2010-2011 to 71 million in 2011-2012. How is it possible? Something is drastically wrong. I mean, if you got your management systems and you got regular meetings with your staff, with your head of your different departments within your department, sections in your department, and you obviously you monitor these things and you ask questions, you red flag what is going on. How is this possible? Your procurement contracts on page 103 as well, Commissioner. How did you allow that? How is it possible? What happened that you allow a situation like that? Do you have recruitment or a staff model, staffing model? We just spoke about this. Members are saying they are understaffed, stressful, seven, and even the union, organized labor, indicated. They say the 7 days might be correct, but there's no provision actually to staff the members accordingly. And as a result, you sit with a sick leave. Do you have a staffing model? So that you can also predict your future intakes. And how are you actually planning to recruit people? Is it in terms of a staffing model or is it just on a random basis? Because you have to determine where you are, where you want to be, what is your challenges, and how many people you require or need to address a particular situation, and how you predict your population inmates is going to grow to make provision for a proper strategic recruitment plan. Now, on page 104, Commissioner, your leadership, you would agree with me that what is contained in this report, in this annual report, is creating a check on your leadership. Seriously. You know, they are saying that even you people have a formal code of ethics, which is clearly communicated with ethical values, but further on they say, compliance with this code is still a challenge. Then on 52, the department has implemented policies and procedures enabling support and understanding of certain things. But understanding and compliance with these policies and procedures are ever still a challenge. Then 53, the department has designed and has the action plan to address internal control deficiencies. But during the time of this audit plan, this plan was, however, not fully implemented. Now, it raised the question, do these people understand the plans and the policies which you yourself formulate that you know not actually complying with your own policies? You know, it seems to me you generate something, but you don't comply with your own policies. Not even, it's not surprising that you are not complying with treasury regulations. So, Chairperson, in conclusion, I just want to say, apart to the Commissioner, if one takes this in total, this report would be justification to this committee to request your removal, and even some of your officers' removal. Be honest, if we continue this way, there is no indication that there's a turnaround in this department. And I'm talking about not as a politician per se. I was in your position. I was also a politician responsible for the department. And I know that, and I agree with the chairperson, this is not an insurmountable problem. This requires just proper management, clear guidelines, clear leadership, a commitment, and consequences if somebody is not doing his or her job. That's bottom line. We've got the responsibility to ensure that 16.7 bloody rent of taxpayers' money. It's not your money. It's not your department's money. It's not our money. It's taxpayers' money. It's being utilized adequately and effectively to ensure that those objectives, which you people determine, not us, we didn't say you have to do NBNC. You determine the needs of your department that you didn't comply with it, but you utilize it to comply with its objectives. Now, Chairperson, as indicated earlier on, if the AG is just an academic exercise, and our hearing here is just an academic exercise, and if our comments and our report does not have an effect, does not evolve or take action afterwards, then we can close business. That's a waste of time. Our report, this committee, we heard last week one of the organized labor representatives and one other department also said, it doesn't seem that this committee has an effect on the things which they raise here. So we are actually to this just an academic exercise with strong talk. If there's no consequences, then we can leave close business. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I've listened with care, absorbed and soaked what has been said here. Yeah? I'll respond on the issues that have been raised, code enforcement, ring fencing of sanctions as proposed by ourselves, that we need to look into the types of misdemeanors that will sanction immediate dismissal. And I've listened also on the unqualified audit consequences for non-compliance by their part of the decision that took place in respect to the 122 indicators that we participated in. And also the issues of the usefulness of information as has been indicated in the Auditor General's report. These are issues that affect the department. I want to say to this committee, leadership is a collective responsibility, but I do stand at the helm of this organization. But I will also want to address two issues of substance. That when we deal with the issues of correctional services, sobriety and ability to think outside the box is something that needs to be taken care of. I'm not going to be personal also in terms of where we are, because I'll be bowing too low to a position wherein I accept things that are not in line with my principle and behavior. But I want to indicate that the audit qualification that we have had by the Auditor General is a consequence of a number of issues. And that it is important, therefore, to contextualize these issues appropriately. And I say that at no point has this leadership willfully decided that it will go in this route like any other leader, like any other organization, you aspire for excellence. And therefore, I want to indicate that we have taken note of the comments that have been made here. And indeed, in any organization, there's what you call consequent management. And in consequent management, it is in relation to what is expected of individuals and the collective that is at the helm of the organization. But let me respond to 122 performance indicators that we spoke about, and we achieved 47. And I did indicate in my opening statement that neither are we happy that we have achieved 47. But that is an indication and preparedness that this organization, because of the nature of what we do and what we have expected to deal with, the complexity therefore. And then I did indicate that some of the indicators that we did put ourselves in this document with hindsight ought not have been here. And is it necessary for us to have had 122? That's one question that we needed to do. Because you are measured in accordance to what is able to be correctly assessed and be measured, and the tools thereof that we need to be put in place. I am to contend that I was part and parcel of that institution like any other collective that you do take decisions, but I cannot stand here and deny and try and play into the area of denying parts of my participation in decision-making. The Auditor General is given the opportunity and the right to write as they assess the organization like any other institution I don't want to believe that what is contained here is merely a simple written statement in order for us not to be compliant. There is a quest for us to create an environment wherein things are done in accordance. But I want also to draw the attention of this committee that when we took over, everything was not in the manner in which it is being reported here. But we're not saying, therefore, that what we have achieved is sufficient. We're saying there is space and possibility for us to advance to a higher level. And given all the opportunities that are available, we shall be in a position to achieve that milestone. And I did indicate that the dashboard that was provided us by the Auditor General when we started was completely different. And therefore, we can speak from a position of knowledge and experience that we have done what is expected, but not to the full opportunity. The fact that we have been able to get in the last 18 years of democracy in this country that Correctional Services has not had a qualified audit is not something that we dream of. But I want to assure this committee that we have done exactly what is expected. We have expanded our duties and our responsibilities in order for us to be able to do what is to achieve the unqualified audit. Now, I want to say to the member, all the issues that have been raised here, fraudulent expenditure, procurement control, staff model, yes, we do have staff model. I can report here that we did indicate to the head of human resource that we need to be able in advance, in a year, to know how many people will be retiring, because we do have the database of those and be able to plan accordingly around the numbers of people that we need to recruit in the organization. The expenditure models, these are the issues that you deal with, but there are certain issues that we need to be able to deal with appropriately as an organization. But, Chair, I think this organization, with the support that it deserves by all stakeholders, because we're at the end of the value chain, it's not as easy as it would seem for us to be able to say we have failed in our mandate. I don't think, as the accounting officer, that we have failed in our mandate. There are areas and pockets of excellence that we have achieved, and that it is incumbent upon us that for those areas where we have been able to achieve, to make cognizance of that. I have no other words to express myself but to say that it's something that we want to work towards too. And there's no perfect organization. An organization that has been in the same situation for the past 17 years. It's not the question of an individual at the helm of the organization that responds effectively to as if I'm the only person who deals with this issue. But I must assure that as the accounting officer, I will not in any way abdicate my responsibility. Where I've given leadership, I've done it with due regard to the capabilities. And I've said to my team, anything that we do, it's done as a collective. Like any choir master and maestro, the strength of the music that you give is in accordance to the strength of the teams that lead. And I'm capable to say here and now that the team that I lead is capable of bringing us that requires a extent. Thank you.
Sure, there are specific questions. Consequences, why are you ignoring the treasury rules, irregular expenditure from 1 to 214, why? Fruitless expenditure from 68 to 71, why? I think you dealt with the staffing recruitment. I think you dealt with the leadership of the National Commissioner per se. Last year's target setting, are you part of it? I think you've dealt with it. Consequences of missing targets, I'm not sure, but let me just Max, you can, as you follow up. I think they haven't answered the consequences of missing targets, why they're ignoring the laws, the increase of irregular and the increase of fruitless. Is there anything else that you want as a follow-up, sir? As a follow-up, so that we can answer otherwise.
As a follow-up, I know the Commissioner is not going to have an answer for all these things. However, I just want to know how many of them here received performance bonuses given this report. Because there's a tendency they reward themselves, not the people. Thanks.
Hola, can I remind you? Once again, consequences of missing targets. Why do you ignore treasury regulations? Why did you move from 1 million to 214?
why did you move from 68,000 to 71 million? And did you get performance bonuses?
Sure, the member indicated some of the questions are not for answering, but I think the, I will venture into that because the, they cannot be rhetoric for sake of being rhetoric. Firstly, I did not ignore treasury regulations. I want to put that, I did not ignore. Because ignoring treasury regulation is an indictment that you are not in a position to provide the appropriate leadership. I'm saying this with the full confidence of the response that I'm making here. Certainly, the expenditure patterns have been indicated that we move from 68 to 1 million. Those are the issues that we, as a team, as a collective, we need to be able to go down. What is it if we miss the ball? When we do assessment on a quarterly basis, on a monthly basis, what is it that we did in order to avoid this particular phenomenon? There are mitigating reasons for this. But certainly, I must admit that the controls that we have are sufficient enough because I need to indicate here that in the year under review, we were able to recruit and put in place a deputy commissioner responsible for internal control and compliance. Things which were not existent in this organization for the past 16, 17 years. I need to put on record that the things that are not done in this organization, especially which ignored issues pertaining to performance of the organization. An organization of this size was relegated when you dealt with issues of compliance from IT perspective, we're at a very low engineer level. And we have elevated this. But if this seems not to be seen as quality of leadership, to deal with substantive issues that were identified, I'm yet to be called to attention on this matter. But I don't want this to be more of a persona as opposed to entire leadership capability that we ignore issues for the sake of trying to be too creative in terms of what we do. The wasteful expenditure and the fruitless expenditure that we have identified, it's a matter that we need to huddle through and try to avoid. And it's true, that was the Mr. Messi saying. We have done an assessment and tracked that for the past 2003 years, 2007-2008, the Auditor General has qualified us on assets. We're not putting our head in the sand here. We take cognizance. But it is important also in the presence of the Auditor General to indicate that we did in the previous years, intervene in order to deal with the issues of assets. When employed, because we did not have an oversight on this particular phenomenon. What is important, therefore, for a leadership that is cognizant of the fact that is to track where areas of weaknesses are and be able to eliminate and eradicate the problems that we have identified. And I must say that the leadership that we have here deals with issues of complexity. And therefore, it's not an easy department, and therefore, we are saying we'll deliver on our mandate. The fact that we come here and listen and get advice on issues that might not be on the purview of our activity, it's something that we take very seriously off. I hope, Chair, because some of the issues, if they need to be responded to, we need to get into the details, especially on the voter agenda. I said in my response that we'll come back and provide a program of action that will be able to deal with the issue that had been raised in the document. That would be the most appropriate response to this chapter.
Last time, your next quarterly meeting with us is on the 1st of November. Now, when you say you're going to give us a response to these matters, are we talking about, because the 1st of November will be probably the last time we see you in 2012. The next time we'll see you, 28th of November, I beg your pardon, it's the 28th of November. Probably the last time we'll see you in 2012. We'll probably see you after the State of the Nation again. So I think the point you're making is that you'll give us these things in a more comprehensive fashion. Can you give us an indication?
In our last appearance on the 28th of November, so I could give this matter substantive attention so that we don't come here flaky. 28th of November will provide a program of action as to how we'll deal with this matter appropriately.
Just a year ago now, did he himself or
from his top management receive performance bonuses. They can give us the names and everything in the report as well. But yes or no, did they receive during this time frame?
Chairperson, none of my officials have received any performance bonus.
The last player in the field, Mr. Self.
Thank you, Chair. I took note of the comments of the National Commissioner about the recapitalization of facilities, more particularly given the fact that the contract for the PPPs has been cancelled, or the bid. I just hope that when the recapitalization of facilities takes place, that we don't in a couple of years sit here and have the comments that are made about the recapitalization of the current facilities, for example, Brunsley, where they say construction behind schedule, poor performance by contractors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, it's one thing to say that you're going to do this by a different route, but let that route be a route that delivers effective services on time, because otherwise I'm afraid you would be failing in the mandate. Secondly, I wonder whether this committee could have a copy of the memorandum of agreement with the RDT, because I think we need to drill down a bit into that and see what has been provided and what hasn't been provided. But I want to ask a very specific question about access control security relating to the comments that are made, I think, on page 48 of the annual report. And which are broadened out on the document that was given to us by the department ahead of this meeting. And I actually want to do so against the background of the National Commissioner's comment on not prioritizing on the core functions of the department. And I want to read a sentence out of this document that was submitted to us, and it says here, the current maintenance contract, that is for access control security, also expired, and due to a lack of technical expertise within the department, an external service provider was appointed to assist DCS with the procurement of a security specialist and a service provider for the management, maintenance, and upgrading of the access control system. Now, sir, I have three very specific groups of questions. The first concerns what they refer to in this document as the current maintenance contract. And I would like to know with which company is or was
Point of Order, Chair.
Chairperson, I think we discussed this matter before. We are the members of Parliament, all of us. If there is any document, we need it. Not that one person from our side, especially the opposition, having the document while we are not having. That's why Jefferson Self, he did this last week. He was sending a document.
Just before we do that, Mr. Self, which document are you referring to now?
I'm referring to a document that I got called Annual Report Reporting by the Department of Correctional Services.
So everybody's got that report?
Yes.
All right. Everybody's got that report.
Hold on.
First of all, we're talking about the report. Everybody's got that report. Is it that document, Mr. South? Can you just take us through the...
It's on page...
The page that you're talking to.
It's on page 8.
On page 8. Okay. No. Hold on, guys. Have you all gone to page 8 of the document? Page 8 of the document, security, is that the one, Mr. Zell?
Yep, that's it. And it is indicator percentage of centers with fully functional access control security.
Yes, that's the second bullet point.
Correct. And the reason for the variation,
right.
I'm reading the second sentence of that.
Okay, that is the current maintenance contract.
Correct.
Okay.
Is Mr. Makakula with me?
I'm hoping that all members are following so that we at least get that's the Correctional Services annual report that we received.
Yeah.
Okay, and official notice as well.
Yeah, and it's...
You got it? Yes, you have it? All right. So
so that at least we're all on the same page. And your question is?
All right. Now I've got three sets of questions.
Let him ask the question, Mr. Kakula, then you can raise it if you've got a moment.
All right. They refer there to a current maintenance contract.
Right.
I want to know with which company is or was the current maintenance contract concluded.
Yes.
How long was the contract operational for? When did it end? And what was the monthly value of the contract, which my understanding is around about 3.5 million rand? All right. How long? When did it end? It ended. What was the monthly value of the contract? What were the deliverables of the contract? And why were the skills not transferred? Then secondly, who is the external service provider that was appointed to assist the department with the procurement of a security specialist? Who appointed the service provider? When was the service provider appointed? And what was the value of the contract? And thirdly, finally, has the department decided to outsource the access control security systems? If so, why was this decision made, and when will this decision take effect?
Thank you. All right. The last one seems to be quite a mouthful, but I'm talking for you. It seems to be quite a mouthful. It's actually a substantial question. Maybe it would need a proper response. I don't want to talk to you about that one. But certainly the MOU with DTI, we want a copy of it. And then the lessons learned from Brandfrey and others, if you're going to recapitalize it, does not have a repeat of those type of things. So those are the category of questions that were raised by Mr. Self. How do you respond, Commissioner?
The whole set of the plethora of questions that Mr. Faust has raised, that will require in writing, because we'll not be able to exhaust this, because we need to go back into the documents themselves. With respect to a copy of the contract of ADT, IDT, MOA, copy will be made available. There's nothing to hide from that. With respect to the capitalization that I spoke about, certainly, there are lessons learned, and lessons learned is that there was complete lack of project management and the ability to deliver the project on time. And certainly, these are lessons that we need to take in forward in the absence of the triple P that were brought with Council, and therefore we shall be in a position to provide a clear guidance as to future facilities that we shall be building. We're not saying that private participation contractors will not be part of this. Minister did indicate that the only thing that shall not be outsourced is the security component. But in terms of procurement of services, it is an open tender. Whoever can provide services will be. But we shall not outsource the security component of the facilities that we shall be building in the future. So in response to that, that would be my response to that. Brandfrey was a very slow example, wherein the project continued for a long time. I think it started in 2009. And because we're not having the capacity within the department and also public works not helping in order for us to achieve the intended objective, we think and believe that it is important that we do things in a manner that we can have time frames in terms of delivery. I hope and trust that I've sought to respond to some of the things that you have raised with us. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, Chair, two things. Firstly, if I write to the National Commissioner with the detailed questions, would that guarantee a speedy response? And secondly, is the privatization, precisely privatization of the security component of the corrections facility an integral part of that access control, which is, according to the document that I saw, is now being proposed to be privatized?
Hold on. I think what you need to do, when you ask those questions, you're not asking them for self. You're asking them so that it guides the Commissioner to respond to all of us. That's my understanding. Okay.
So instead of you writing it down, we're going to ask Mr. Sal to regurgitate what he has said to you in writing, that you can have it and compare it to what you've got, and then you can prepare your response. You don't have to respond today. The question just then is, by when will you respond? Can we also lump this with the 28th business? I don't know, but it's up to you guys. By when do you want to respond to Mr. Self? I'm assuming you'll be able to get this out of the way in the next week or so. By when would you want to respond to that, sir?
Well, I think depending on when this matter is brought to our attention, but I would like to have everything being done on a single day. The last, on the 28th of November.
Depends whether the contract would have been awarded then for the external security advisor.
But we must be careful. The awarding or otherwise of the contract is a managerial exercise. So I really don't have a problem whether they've awarded it or haven't awarded it. But if in our investigation there's something wrong, then obviously there'll be consequences. I don't think really there's a problem about the timing of our intervention with you. However, you do know that there's now some sort of a spotlight on it. I think that in itself should take us through. Otherwise we might be holding up something that is legitimate in terms of the need or whatever the case might be. My view, my understanding is that you can do what you need to do. Ours is an oversight as opposed to a management hands-on. But it doesn't stop us from retrospectively dealing with something that you would have done even after. I'm saying even if you did it before the 28th. I'm sure that's the correct approach. You're right, Mr. Self. Thank you very much. Okay. So, 28th? You'll get it as soon as possible on the 28th. The last point that I'd want to make, and it is two, and then we're going to wrap up because it is 1 o'clock on the dot. Let us start on page... Sorry. It's a very... maybe a type of error. On page 190. Might just be a typo error, but it probably answers part of the advocate nexus question. Performance rewards by critical occupations for this financial year. The second last line says senior managers. Number of beneficiaries, are you with me? Senior managers, number of beneficiaries is north, so no senior managers got performance bonuses, but the cost was 21,000. You with me? Somebody explain that to us. How, who did we give the 21,000 if nobody got the rewards? And then if we go to the one that we've been harping on, and unfortunately this is the pain of annual reports, page 150. The 71 million rand. I think we have spoken to, and I'm for the purpose of this exercise, Commissioner, I'm taking away the 37 million rand, which is the public works matter, and I'm taking away the PPP, which is the 28 million rand, which is the cancellation. That still leaves us at 5.5 million rand. From the 71, if we remove those, it leaves us at 5.5 million rand. And that 5.5 million rand talks to accommodation fees cancelled, air tickets for delegates not approved, non-attendance of training. There was training, but there was non-attendance. So I think all of those things that we're talking about, there comes about 5 million rand. Are you with us? You with us, right? The Public Finance Management Act says, not enough page 150, we took about 71 million. I'm saying take away the two big items that you have in the 71 million, the 37 and the 27. It leaves us about 5 million rand. Okay? Which is fruitless expenditure. Mere expenditure which was made in vain and would have been avoided had reasonable care been exercised. That's what the PFMA says fruitless expenditure is. Expenditure which was made in vain and would have been avoided had reasonable care taken place. 5 million rand
could have been avoided if we took reasonable care. And then there are sanctions for that, for fruitless and wasteful expenditure, financial misconduct on grounds of dismissal and all those type of things in the PFMA. Can we also, on the 28th, Commissioner, because it's pending, get an indication of whether we are going to recover that 5 million rand from those that were guilty? I'm saying this because you'll be aware that DPW have started the process. They are claiming, I think, 55 million rand from the previous DG for this type of exercise. So if you can give us indication of are we able to, from anybody, I mean, somebody paying for VAT to people that are not supposed to be getting VAT. They're paying for tickets that were not supposed to be given. Can we find out who did those payments and ask them to repay the department that 5 million rand? I just want you to come back on the date and say how much of that is payable. Is recoverable, I beg your pardon. Is that okay? All right, how much of that is recoverable? And then the bonus, can somebody explain the 21 and we'll close business. Is there a big mistake on page 180 that we got 21,000 for bonus and yet there was no manager? It's a finger.
Shall we not say it's a finger? We'll investigate and check. Because on the other page, on the other side, it's a zero. Average cost of employee. So we'll investigate that and come back to yourselves.
All right. Thank you very much. Then to summarize, there is a few things that you'll bring to us on the 28th at our last quarterly. We will write our report tomorrow on Friday, on Thursday, on the basis of our interaction with you and, of course, making proviso for some of these things that we won't take a decision on because we're waiting for it. In other words, it's work in progress. And we will not announce on them because we'll expect some sort of a report from you on them. And we will then publish our report or present our report on the annual report of the inspecting judge and on the annual report of the department. Commissioner, your team, thank you very much. We do meet on the 28th next. And at that date, we will then hopefully tie up whatever is here and deal with the third quarter's reports. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
I can't send a copy of the board report.